indicator, number of policies approved by the board. In the fourth quarter, we expected to approve 3 policies. We did not actually approve 3 policies because 3 had already been done in the last quarter. And therefore, 4 policies had already been approved in the last quarter. And the focus for the fourth quarter was only on the charter and the stakeholder engagement strategy, which was prioritized by the board. And as such, then we only dealt with those 2 during that quarter in terms of development and finalization. So we'll then obviously in the next financial year prioritize any shortfall that would have arisen out of the 6, which was the target for the annual, which we overall we had a shortfall of 2. Percentage of all movable assets to be recorded in the asset register. There was no variance there because all assets of the board that we actually procured, of the trust actually, and the board that we procured during that time were actually recorded in terms of our asset register. To ensure the reduction of vacancies, we were expecting to have 100% in terms of position filled, but we couldn't have because of the post of real estate manager and deputy manager administration that remains not filled, which are currently the one for the real estate manager. Because we're not able to attract more suitable candidates, the board had requested that that post be reviewed because maybe the challenge might be on the nature of people that we're actually targeting versus also the salary structure that we have. So that, again, because of that, we couldn't then actually fill that post. The other one for the deputy manager administration as well was also looked at in terms of that, and those have since been in the first quarter been advertised. On item 1.6, to ensure performance management, the performance agreements were actually concluded, all of them, so there was no variance, which was done obviously during the first 2 quarters of the financial year. 1.7, provision of skills development to improve service delivery, internal skills audit, that had already been done and therefore there is no variance there because in the fourth quarter there wasn't anything because that was done during the first quarter. Number of training programs done, it was supposed to be 1 on the fourth quarter. We ended up having 2 and with a variance of +1. This was based on operational reasons, and as such, we had to prioritize a certain training that were necessary for our staff to be able to perform to the maximum. To improve customer relations, payment of undisputed invoices within 30 days, there is no variance there because all our service providers have been paid within the specified timelines, especially for all those that are undisputed. For any disputed invoice, obviously, it depends on the dispute at hand. Number of MOAs with traditional counsel signed in quarter 4, we're supposed to have 3, and we managed to have 2, and there was a variance of -1. This was mainly because of a short quarter. Most of the traditional councils closed and they only came back around mid or towards the third week of January. So it wasn't, we only had 2 months actually to finalize this. Obviously the mitigation plan moving forward so that we don't have such a shortfall is to have engagements with the local houses of traditional councils. On program 2, provision of secure tenant rights to facilitate development on Ingonyama Trust land. Number of tenant rights approved by the board. The target for quarter 4 was 150. The result was 578. The variance was 428. This was as a result of the clearing of the backlog from previous improved as well as improved performance. members of the portfolio committee would recall that during our last quarter, we did indicate that we are undertaking an analysis of our backlog, and in order to make sure that we're able to make sure that we minimize that and also to improve performance. This positive performance is as a result of that. So we, in future, we'll continue to monitor performance. 2.2 is to maintain an integrated comprehensive land tenure administration system or database. There is number of updates in the holding register is one, and that was done, and there's no variance there. Number of land parcels for commercial use valued. This target was actually achieved, the whole nine was achieved during the second quarter, and therefore in the fourth quarter it had already been achieved. Number of MOUs approved by the board. Here again, it was supposed to be one, but this was not actually achieved because of capacity constraints internally in terms of dealing with the various district municipalities. Therefore, the mitigation plan is to improve capacity, and I think that is in line with the process that the board has undertaken in terms of trying to relook at the organogram. 2.4, ensure legal occupation of trust land. A number of programs conducted to prevent illegal occupation. It was supposed to be one, and we did two. There is a positive variance. This is because there was unlawful occupation of land identified earlier in the year and was also dealt with in terms of the instruction to the attorneys, in terms of Siyabusa farming, as well as under, which is Siyabusa farming under Nyawo Traditional Council, and illegal occupation under Bomoso Traditional Council. Program 3, rural development. The first strategic objective is to provide support to beneficiary communities to improve food security. There, I think the first performance indicator was already done because that is a report which was obviously prepared at the beginning of the year. Number of potential projects of high commercial value for partnership with private sector. It was supposed to be one. Unfortunately, there were zero results on that. The reason was the variance was a minus one. The project, to be specific on this one, was identified by the board. They also agreed with the person concerned, which was a company called Adamopix. But the initial site that was identified was not suitable, because they wanted arable land. And when they actually went to actually do the site inspection in terms of soil testing and stuff, and they felt that the land was not suitable, thus then we had to relook at possibility of re-identification of other sites, which is currently on progress with one traditional council under Mabaso Traditional Council. Number of agricultural projects approved by the board, 12. There's no variance because those continue to operate, and during the fourth quarter, there was a second planting season for the agricultural project. 3.2, to facilitate economic development, MOU Agribusiness Development Agency approved by the board. This still has not happened because it's dependent on the third party. But in order to deal with this issue for the 2017-18 financial year, we've opened it up for other entities as opposed to only looking at one agency, so that then probably the one that we might sign first will be the one that we'll actually deal with moving forward. 3.3, to identify strategically located land to be utilized for high-impact commercial ventures. A land audit conducted to identify prime land in line with the provincial spatial development framework for potential investment. The target there was one. The result was zero. The variance is minus one. The reason why we're saying it's zero is because the audit started, but it wasn't actually finalized in the fourth quarter. It started at Matulini Traditional Council in Umzumbe in the fourth quarter, but because of the extensiveness in the Traditional Council, it had not been finalized at the end of its fourth quarter. The project is to be finalized in the 2017-18 financial year. Traditional Council supports. The first strategic objective is to provide training to Traditional Councils. That skills audit was done, then there was no variance there, and the plan was done earlier on in the year, and no variance there. Number of Traditional Councils trained. In quarter four, the target was supposed to be 5, and unfortunately we couldn't reach the target because our training officer passed on during the time. And therefore, in terms of mitigation plan moving forward, we're looking at, initially we're looking at outsourcing, but the board has since advertised for the training of supposed so that then it can be filled in order for the training to Traditional Councils to proceed. Facilitate skills development for young people living on communal land. The quarter four results there wasn't anything put in there, and the quarter four results were 76. This was the commencement, due to the commencement of the 2017-18 academic year. And what we're saying in terms of future mitigation plan for this target is that we'll align the educational awards in future to the first, to the last quarter of the financial year, because that's when then the academic program begins in universities. So for the fourth quarter, we had an achievement of 76 in terms of the awards. Mr. Hirlas, you can then proceed. I'll move the mouse from this side so that we don't move. No, it's fine. You can talk from there. Sorry. You can talk from there. I'll move it for you. Yeah.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Chairperson, members and colleagues. Now we'll present the slides on the financial performance of the Ingonyama Trust Board for the fourth quarter. Can I just, is it better, ma'am? Okay. Thank you. Financial performance for the Ingonyama Trust Board for the fourth quarter. The expenditure per program. There are four programs: administration, land management, rural development, and traditional council support. For administration, the actual spending for the fourth quarter was 16.3 million, and the percentage of the fourth quarter budget that was spent in the fourth quarter was 36.4%. Land management, the fourth quarter actual spending was 12,000 and the percentage was 2.08%. For rural development, 1.2 million was spent in the fourth quarter, which resulted in a percentage of 56.23%. Traditional council support, the fourth quarter actual spending was 1.4 million, which resulted in a percentage of 19.16%. of the fourth quarter budget that was spent in the fourth quarter. This slide is a graphical presentation of the expenditure per program for the fourth quarter. Administration was 85.6%. Land management was 0.1%. Rural development was 6.6%, traditional council support was 7.7% of the total expenditure. And then expenditure per economic classification. Compensation of employees. The fourth quarter actual spending was 6.2 million. and the percentage of the budget spent was 115.33%. Goods and services, actual spent for the fourth quarter was 12.3 million, and the percentage that was spent in the fourth quarter was 37.93%. Rent, Ulundi office, amount spent in the fourth quarter was 27,000. 93.10% of the fourth quarter budget was spent. Capital, 484,000, which resulted in a percentage of 2.8% that was spent of the fourth quarter budget. And thereafter, we have the notes on the expenditure. I'm going to give a brief. I'm going to go through it very briefly. The total expenditure for quarter four amounted to 19.07 million. 34.44% of the fourth quarter budget was spent in quarter four. This included capital expenditure. 115.33% of the compensation of employees' fourth quarter budget was utilized in the fourth quarter. 37.93% of the total goods and services of the fourth quarter budget was utilized in the fourth quarter. 100% of the total transfer received from the department was utilized for the year ending 31st March 2017. And then notes on the Ingonyama Trust expenditure. Capital expenditure is paid for by the Ingonyama Trust. The savings in the fourth quarter for goods and services is mainly due to the underspending of the office accommodation capital budget. Capital expenditure comprised of furniture and equipment, 31,000. Computer equipment, 18,000. Improvements to buildings, 434,000. And thereafter we have a graphical presentation of the expenditure per economic classification for the fourth quarter. Compensation of employees amounted to 32.6%, goods and services 64.7%, rent for Ulundi office was 0.1%, and the capital amount was 2.5%. Thereafter, we go to the slide pertaining to the schedule of goods and services. This is a breakdown of all the goods and services for the fourth quarter, resulting in amount of, we go to page 19, the total amounted to 12.3 million. Thereafter, we'll slide on the schedule of revenue. Item, rental income. The actual income for the fourth quarter was 9 million. The other income, which included servitudes, contractual royalties, and sundry, was 1.4 million. Investment income was 3.7 million, which resulted in the total income, excluding transfer payment, which was 14.2 million. Thereafter, when you take transfer payment into account, which was 1.2 million for the fourth quarter, the total income resulted in 15.3 million, which gave you a percentage of 286.19% for the fourth quarter. Notes on the fourth quarter income. The total revenue generated for the fourth quarter amounted to 14.1 million, which excluded transfer payments. Transfer payments amounting to 1.2 million was received and fully utilized in the fourth quarter. Total income including transfer payment amounted to 15.3 million. And thereafter we go to a graphical presentation of the actual income. Rental income was 59%. Transfer payment received was 8%. Other income, 9%. Investment income, 24%. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. And the acting, are you acting CFO?
I'm the accountant.
Okay. For the presentation, Ms. Bingo, any additions on the presentation? Do you want to comment before I give this opportunity to members to engage in the presentation?
I think we will explain the under expenditure in some of the items as we receive questions from the members, Chair. But I must say that on the capital expenditure, we always, members can note that there is a huge underspending because we are looking at extending office to accommodate more staff there. And we're still at the planning stage. I think at some point we were hesitating whether that should be done or not. We've had board approval that we should go ahead with construction or planning for construction of additional office space. But we are still very much at the planning stage, but hence the under expenditure on that item. But also that the budget for that comes from the trust account. I think members will remember that, will note that we now have the board budget, we now have the trust budget. So in terms of the trust budget, the office accommodation extension will come from that budget, the trust budget. But we'll take questions.
Honorable Filtane, Honorable Nchabeleng, Honorable Mbabama, Honorable Mandela. Honorable Filtane, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to start off on a lighter note, I think it's just as well that the judge is not here today. We haven't had the deputy deliberating so fluently, just because there was always the judge. On to the serious business of the day. On program one, administration, there's an item there where the reasons for variance is that reports not providing reliable information to the board. And the mitigation plan is that request the board for guidance. My question is, why was this guidance not provided earlier? Because this, the way it's put, it suggests that it was not provided, not that there's going to be improvement on one given earlier. And on program two, that constituents variance of 428. Now, seeing that that was your fourth quarter end of the financial year, how and when will you make up for this shortfall? Then lastly, and financial performance. Just the very first slide there, slide 12. As much as I know that contribution by government constitutes less than 20% of your total revenue, but I'm still emboldened enough to put this question to you. You are a statutory body. Now, government expects from you certain deliverables, which in the main are provision of social services to the people. Now, land administration expenditure, 2.3 million, which is less than 2% of your total budget for the year. Rural development, 9 million, less than 8%. When you add the 2%, that's when you get to about 10% of your 120 million. Now, if your expenditure is structured like that, less than 10% of your total budget goes to the core business of your very existence, how do you hope to bring any change to the people's lives? Because I've looked at the explanation on goods and services and all that, and like I said previously, these are of a supportive nature to the real cause for which you exist, where you spend, 78 million, 30 million, you know, to traditional council support. Now, that's about 90%, which goes mainly to support. Now, I take it that the people actually stand to benefit on those two items, land management as well as rural development. But that's where you spend only less than 10% of the total budget, on those people. How do you hope to change people's lives in the context of your declared reasons why you exist in the first place? And I know, Chair, that this is not exactly the first time or second time that I put this question, and the way the budget is structured still does not convince me that we're going to see, the change when money is spent, on traditional council. I've heard the explanation before, but I would still put the question. It's just not convincing at all. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. My other question is taken by Honorable Filtan. It shows that our focus is actually on the right things here, that the ITB has a certain performance, a duty to perform, that of administering land in traditional authorities, belonging under the Nkonyama Trust. But what we spend on our core mandate is less than what we spend on supportive, so it doesn't gel with me. The last time when we made your presentation, CFO, you made two presentations. You made two separate budgets, one for the trust and the other one for the board. Does that only apply at that time? Is it not applying now? Can't we hear what is now in this fourth quarter? What was the the expenditure on the trust and then the other one on the board? If we could just be consistent with that, or unless if we want to change that, then it will still be fine. Just tell us that we have changed. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as a relatively new member, I'm a little bit confused, and I think it's mainly my fault, so I would just like clarity. The report says presentation to the Parliament Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land... Where am I now? Sorry. It says Ingonyama Trust Board's fourth quarter performance and financial report. So my confusion is, we seem to be reporting for the for quarter four only. Will we see the whole year with the annual financial statements? That is the question that I'm asking, because I understand that we're reporting as at quarter four, but in my mind it seems like since we said financial report 2016-2017 financial year, we should actually have the whole financial year. Let me make an example. On Program 1 administration, I was just looking at the to improve customer relationships 1.8 on page 7. And you have a number of MOAs with traditional councils approved by the board. You've got a number of 10. But because you are reporting for the quarter, I can't see out of the 10 for the whole year what has been achieved. I don't know if you get my question. They will answer then. Thank you. And then the same question as Ntate Fuldane on Program 1 administration. Number of communication reports submitted to the board. I'm just curious as to what communication reports are these. Are they linked to the stakeholder engagement strategy that was approved? Is that what we are communicating? Could you just explain what we are communicating there? Because it's, if it's linked to the stakeholder engagement strategy, which was not implemented, then you can't really have communication reports. So if you can just clarify my confusion there. In under Program 3, Rural Development, 3.2, to facilitate economic development, industry and rural enterprise establishment, you've said the target is dependent on a third party. Could you just tell us which third party this is? If you could just name the third party. And then again, under the fourth quarter expenditure, I think it's page 14, the first line, compensation of employees, percentage of actual spent of the fourth quarter budget is slightly over. Could we just get an understanding what is the 15.33% on that? Why is it over? Also, on notes on expenditure, page 15, we say 100% of the total transfer payment received from department was utilized for the year ending 31st March 2017. Just for my understanding, could you explain what that transfer payment is? Or just explain the whole sentence for me, please. I'm sure the other parties understand what it's all about. And then page 19, schedule of goods and services. You've got a cost for stationery and printing, electricity and water, and all of that. I assume this is the cost for quarter four and not for the whole year. And having said that, you show us a cost, but what was the budget? Maybe it's somewhere in here, I'm just not seeing it. If you can just explain it. I usually like to have, if you give me a figure to say this was a cost, I would like to see as against the budget. What was it, so that I can see whether you're up or down or on budget, etc. And yes, Chair, I think my first question will answer a lot of my questions in terms of reporting for the whole financial year, not just for the fourth quarter. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apology for my voice. I've got a frog in my throat. I'm still struggling to recover fully from the sickness that Honorable Bhutani was referring to earlier. Mm-hmm. It's the dead season, Chair. Most of my questions, let me just thank the CEO and the Deputy Chair and the Shadow CFO for their presentation, Chair. The bulk of my questions has been covered by other members. Just on Program 2, Chair, with regard to the number of land tenure rights approved, in actual fact, the board have exceeded its target nearly by 100%. Chair, what I would wish to know is, what is the import, the type of rights that has been concluded? What kind of benefits would be accrued to the community that live on trust land? What can they gain from this arrangement with the ITB Chair? I think the other members have raised a concern with rural development in relation to us. Honorable Bhutani said it's a core program that has been so vastly underspent in this quarter. It is indeed a concern, Chair. I think last year I'm not quite sure whether it has been covered, but the audit that has been done to identify prime land. At this point in time, where is the old sites for the prime land for investment purposes? I know we haven't reached your target, but I'm quite sure. I think we as a committee would love to have a sense of where all five of them are located in terms of your annual report, but in terms of now, you haven't achieved that, but I think it will be great if we can. I don't want to refer to an old matter that we always raise, say, when it comes to educational awards, that breakdown. Surely, CEO, I can't remember receiving a breakdown that clearly indicates whether learners with disability has been included or not in the educational awards that has been granted. Especially if one talk about this quarter, Chair, that breakdown would be an important one, Chair, I think.
Yeah, Jefferson, I'm a bit worried because it seems like the ITB is regressing. Last year, you have certain targets for this fourth quarter, and only six were achieved. You sound surprised. And administration. The targets were 13. We achieved 6. And which is a regression from last year, from the last financial year. It's under administration on your targets. Okay, you can just answer
which
that question.
Are you?
No.
Oh, sorry.
How many targets did you have for this quarter, for the fourth quarter? Just note that and say that it's your performance is different from that of last year. You went down in terms of performance. Because, or maybe we can talk about that outside the meeting because you sound a bit confused about what I'm saying.
I think you have noted the questions as raised by the members. Just to address a few issues before I give to the CEO and the Deputy Chair to respond on some of the issues raised. Honorable Fultana, the issue of the 428, I think it's over performance when reading it, that report. And also to Honorable Mbabama, today we're dealing with the fourth quarter report. We're aware that according to the PFMA, towards the end of September, they're supposed to submit the annual reports, which will be the consolidation of the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter. But today we're specifically dealing with the fourth quarter performance report. So that is why when looking at the report, it indicates the performance of the fourth quarter. CEO, while we're presenting, there are a few things that I've noted in your presentation. The first one is the shifting of the targets, of which is a problem. Because if you submit a plan to the committee that at this time are going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, when you're supposed to report, then you shift that target to the next financial year. They're telling us now about 2017, 2018. It's a problem because it means that the plan that you've submitted to this committee is not accurate. Secondly,
the delay in the implementation of some of the targets is also a concern. For instance, you've said, let me cite an example of the customer service charter. Then you indicated that there was a delay in the approval. Then there was a special board meeting for the policy approval was held in March. I'm citing just an example of these delays. There's a question that has been raised by Honorable Filtane on the issue of the communication report. Your annual target was 12, your quarter four target was 3. You didn't perform. Then you're saying the reasons, reports not providing reliable information to the board. Then the mitigation plan, you're saying that the request for board for guidance on how these reports should be structured. It means that from the first quarter up to the fourth quarter, there was no report. Because to me, if there was a report on the first quarter, second quarter, and the third quarter, there were previous reports. Then now you have a problem on the fourth quarter reports. It's a problem. Can you clarify that? Because you can't say on the fourth quarter when you're supposed to report that you seek guidance. What were the status of the previous quarters on these communication reports? There were no reports. Are you telling us that the information was not reliable? It was not accurate? Can you just clarify that? The delay in the finalization of policy. I think we've been talking about this matter for quite some time because it really disturbed us as this committee, because if you just keep on implementing without any policy, then it's a problem. On your presentation, you're saying that on the fourth quarter report, we're supposed to finalize 3 policies. Then on the reason for the variance, you're saying that though the targets for policies is 3, during the fourth quarter, 4 policies were already approved in the previous quarter. Therefore, the variance overall is 2 policies, which came about as a result of the delay in policy formulation. Mitigation plan, you are saying that to prioritize the policies in the first and second quarter of the new financial year, you keep on shifting, you know, some of the targets which are supposed to perform in this financial year under review. Now you're telling us about 2017-2018. The vacant positions. We are saying that the reasons for the variance, the real estate manager and deputy manager administration positions were not filled. Then mitigation plan, deputy manager administration post to be processed in the first quarter of the 2017-2018. Real estate manager position pending review as the board is commissioning a service provider to restructure the organogram. But while you're presenting, also you've said that the posts have been advertised. Which is which? Reviewal? Advertisement? Can you just clarify? Under the number of the, what is this? It's an MOA with traditional councils. You are saying the variance is -1, your target was 2. It was the short quarter due to traditional councils closing for festive season. Is that the reason? Because when you plan, you know that there are holidays. But now you have to just tell us how far have you implemented your plan? Then you are saying that because of the festive seasons, that is why you are unable to, you were unable to implement your plan. Ake njanazi ukuthi Christmas ukhona. Ngoba Christmas uhlala mhla ka 25 each and every year. So when you plan, you know very well ukuthi vele Christmas uyeza. But now the reason you are saying it was a shortcut because traditional councils closing for festive season. You were aware of it. Then what was the problem? Number of the memorandum of understandings approved by the board, capacity constraints. Where is this challenge? With the board? The capacity challenge. Is it with the board? With the administration? And you are saying the mitigation plan, you are going to improve capacity. How? Number of potential projects of high commercial value for partnership with the private sector. They're saying the reason for variance was that the project was identified and approved by the board. However, the initial site was not suitable. Yini ukuqala kuqala before you plan? Is it an egg or a chicken or is it chicken? Then the egg will follow. Then what is the current status again on this matter? The issue of the training officer. You're saying that the reason for you not to achieve this target was that the training officer passed away. Do you have one training officer? But on the other side, you're saying the ITP land is vast. How do you expect one person to run around the whole ITP land? The vastness of the land, appointing one person, that person decide to pass away, then now you're saying you have not reached to your target because you don't have anyone. What is the reason for appointing one person? And you're talking of the outsourcing of the training function. The president has just emphasized this matter several times, that we must reduce the outsourcing. We must just try to create jobs for the unemployed. Are you saying that there are no people who have got the capacity to train the traditional councils? That is why you decide to outsource? Because the president has gave us the line of march. Then if the president said we must reduce outsourcing, reduce the use of consultants, on the other side we are doing the same thing. What do you mean? You're defying the president. Are you not aware of the challenges that are facing this country? Training officer, what is the requirement? Maybe if you can just tell us, if you advertise this post of the training officer, what are you looking for? Looking for a teacher, for a lawyer, accountant, what are you looking for? CEO, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with the questions from Honorable Filtane on the communication plan. And I think that also would cover the questions from the chairperson on the communication report. Maybe it's something that comes from the history of the nature of reports that were actually being produced. Because this is not a new target. This has been a standing target for the past, I think, 3 years. The nature of reports that were initially being provided or maybe submitted for the past, I think, 3 years or so, were mainly what one would call cuttings, more than just proper reports. And as a result, then the board reviewed and said it was not in a position to actually deal with those reports because they were mainly cuttings. And yet the person who is our media person was mainly familiar with those kinds of reports. The major issue, maybe just to also indicate that if you were to look at quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four, correctly, Chairperson, there will be an underperformance on this item because of the confusion, I would assume, between the secretariat and the requirements thereof in terms of if it was to be changed, why, how it will be changed. It's only recent that there is now a plan that is currently underway, which is a proper communication plan, looking at both internal communication as well as external communication in order for this issue to be addressed. So it's been, in the past, these communication reports were initially accepted, but they were mainly cuttings and clippings in terms of trends on IT-related issues as well as on land management issues. And that has been the shift in terms of the rationale for the nature of reports that were presented by our media liaison officer to the board, that they were not up to what the board probably was looking at. Maybe that's just the gist of it, and that's why, as I'm saying, there is no reason, there is no change actually on this item throughout the year. There has been underperformance on it throughout because of the same issue, and thus then the issue of the guidance that's being sorted, so that then, and thus which has resulted in the nature of the plan that is now being looked at. In terms of, I think the chairperson has clarified the issue of 425, that is as an overperformance, so I don't need to get into it. On slide 12, the mandate of ICB is mainly land management more than social services. In the process of managing land, obviously there are certain services that then we render to the traditional councils as well as through the leases to the communities, and also through the other programs that have since emerged, I think, emanating from the board, which is your projects as well as the issues on land audit and other things. The budget mainly, I guess, that we get as a transfer payment from the department is for mainly administration. That's to a very large extent, that's how the budget gets utilized. The rest of the budget, as I think members would be aware, is coming from the trust budget. I understand the plight as indicated by Honorable Filtane, that the main thing is to change the lives of the people. However, if one was to look at where is the actual main under expenditure, we'll find it in rural development as mainly traditional council support. And that is mainly because the budget there is the budget that is held in trust for the communities. And I did indicate in the last meeting of this hearing that the ITB was starting to work with the communities to come up with business plans in order for those funds to be utilized. And therefore, it's not easy to just give it away, because they normally the disbursement is mainly informed by projects on the ground, and as such, in the light of capacity constraints within the traditional councils, it is not feasible to just dish it out, and because at the end of the day, the accountability in terms of how those funds have been utilized is critical. And the community projects that I think we have reported on are also in existence in those particular communities. But I think the senior accountant would actually respond to that. But I do take note of the fact that I think the honorable members are saying we need to begin a shift in our budgeting process to put more funds for the benefit of the people more than on the administration. I think we take note of that, but I just needed to just do the explanation first so that then in outer years maybe it's something that the board needs to look at, especially in the trust budget, because mainly in the transfer payment, it goes mainly towards the administration part of the budget. In terms of, I think, the issue of the whole year versus fourth quarter, I think the chairperson has responded to that. The third party that we refer to is the Agricultural Development Agency. We initially wanted to have an MOA with them in order for the processing and beneficiation of the agricultural produce. But I guess the issues, they got delayed from their side. Much as it is part of our government, but obviously at some point we got, even meetings in some instances got cancelled whilst we're already in the venue. So it's all of those issues that if you're reliant on a third party, you can't always dictate the terms. And that's why, as I said, moving forward, we are looking at increasing the net to look at other institutions that actually do the similar or the same thing so that then we don't get confined only to the Agricultural Development Agency. With regard to Honorable Madela on the positive or maybe over achievement there, the communities would actually benefit because some of those leases are mainly commercial in nature, and because of that, then any rental that gets collected is for the benefit of the community. And as such, then they will be then submitting whatever projects they want done in terms of that particular issue.
To finish, then you will come in.
Okay, thanks. On the issue of people with disability, I must say it's still a challenge, and we still don't have, and I think it's something you have raised, Honorable Member Madela, on a number of occasions, and it's not like we're not looking at it. We are looking at it, but we are hoping that maybe moving forward we might work with the Disability Association in the province to probably assist us in terms of targeting directly those particular people. But at this current moment, I must be honest and say there hasn't been for those. On administration, 13 targets, I must be honest, I got a bit lost, Honorable Chavele, unless maybe you're able to direct us to the performance indicator, to the strategic objectives, because it's got a number, and that will then be in a position to actually direct us to exactly what this under targeting is in relation to administration. So I think, as you rightfully said, maybe we might engage outside, because maybe there's something that we don't, because I looked at it, I couldn't find it. But I'm not saying it's not there, but I'm saying maybe it's where one is looking. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the delays in the implementation and then pushing things into the next financial year, I think in the last meeting of the Portfolio Committee where ITB was present, the Chairperson also did indicate that we also had staff that were on suspension. And obviously, if you look at the capacity in terms of levels of staff in ITP, especially on policy formulation, we're looking at the highest level of people in ITP, either than the CEO, are at a deputy manager level. And in terms of policy formulation, they are not necessarily at a level where they are fair with issues of actual drafting policies. And therefore, it is a true fact that there is a capacity constraint in terms of that. And because the board currently is looking at the organogram, we're hoping then that we'll have people that will have improved capacity in terms of understanding on how to make policies or draft policies. So basically, yes, there is an internal capacity, and we cannot actually put it otherwise. There is an issue of internal capacity in terms of that. The issue of the post being reviewed and advertised, yes, the post of real estate manager was reviewed and has since been advertised as a land management manager, if I'm not mistaken, no longer as a real estate manager. So basically, yes, it was, as I'm talking current, that post has been advertised after the end of the financial year. With the one, I think, on deputy manager administration, I stand under correction here as well. It's gone for review in order for us, again, to actually check the correct level, whether it is actually supposed to be at the level where it is. But one is hoping that because there is now the process of organogram review, that process is going to actually indicate where these levels should be. And thus, then the issue of capacity constraints will then be probably finally eliminated moving forward. The issue of MOAs with TCs, I take the fact that, yes, we do know that there is Christmas and we do know that there is New Year. But I don't think we were aware of the times that the TCs close and reopen, because ordinarily for government, you normally are back on the 3rd or the 4th. But you only discover that some of them only reopen around the 15th towards the latter part of January. So they actually close a longer time as opposed to what we normally thought would have been the scenario where you open quite early, just like any other government institution. So I think moving forward, we will look into that and address that. The issue of how we intend improving capacity, the process of the organogram review, we do believe is going to address that. And as such, then, that will be an issue that would be an issue of the past. The MOA with Adamo Peaks, the current scenario with the Adamo Peaks, which was the company that the board had approved to sign an agreement with because it was for the production of groundnuts. Initially, which was, as I indicated, it was Kwamaki Traditional Council. But now, currently, they are looking at Kwamabaso Traditional Council under Mhlabuyalingana local municipality, and that's where they're currently identifying a new site so that then they can be able to proceed with the process of production of groundnuts, but also the beneficiation thereof for the production of peanut butter and other related products that come from groundnuts. I think what was critical maybe for the board to agree here was the model that they had presented to the board, which was more on community beneficiation, where they would provide a market for the community, but also an element in terms of the beneficiation of those groundnuts into the peanut butter production, where I think 2,500 hectares of land was to be done by the community. They were only requesting 500. So in other words, the 2,500 were going to produce and there will be the market, but also they will then beneficiate and the community will benefit out of it. The training officer, there is one training officer. There was one training officer. There is one training officer post the Sinyangonyama transport. And as such, one believes the engagement, or maybe the process of engaging in terms of the organogram review is going to deal with it. In terms of the qualifications, it's a combination of the understanding of Ingonyama Transport being affair with the teaching, or maybe training, not teaching as such, training, as well as legal requirements, because the same person would be the person that assists the traditional councils as well to establish community development trusts, so that when funds accrue to them, they're in a better position to actually firstly manage those funds, but also register as community development trusts, so that the funds, when they then are coming through, they can come through the development trust for the benefits of the community. So it's not necessarily just a straightforward maybe teacher, but somebody with a bit of an understanding of the legal background, but at the same time, because that person will also be in a position to register, assist them to register as trust, as the other person was actually undertaking those responsibilities as well. Maybe let me allow senior accountant to respond on to the questions that relate to finance, and then probably deputy chairperson will then on the ones that I might have mistakenly left out. Thank you, Chair.
The accountant.
Thank you. Okay, one of the questions that was raised was previously in the quarters it was separated as two, trust and board, and now it's represented as one. It is noted, and going forth it will be taken into consideration. And now I hand you over to the deputy chairperson, Ms. Bengo. Thank you.
Papa.
There are quite a number of questions that I think the CEO or maybe the accountant should have answered. I feel that I asked. And one of them was why there is overspend on compensation of employees in this particular quarter, especially seeing that you were not paying for the training officer. But maybe it's the payout. But we just need an explanation on that. And, I was answered on the transfer pricing. Oh, and this one of the comms, I understand now that it's communication generally, internal and external. And I'm hearing that you are using a media liaison officer to do your board reports. Do you not have a board secretariat? Or a board secretary to actually, to me it sounds strange that a media liaison person will be doing board reports. It's just my experience, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
CEO?
Sorry, Chair. The other one that was not answered, I know that on the schedule of goods and services, with that 12 million, you are explaining it as it appears under actual spending on your expenditure per economic classification. My question was, this might be a generic report in terms of the reporting, but would it not make more sense if you have the cost column and then you also split the budget of, of 32 million? So that we can see per item what has actually happened. I'm not sure if it's a generic report or not.
Okay. Okay. In the regarding the compensation of employees during the months of this quarter mainly, there has been a project that is called Lease Overhaul Project, where we ITB employed data capturers on a short-term basis in order to to actually clear out the, because there were challenges with the leases, the way the filing and stuff like that, and it was quite difficult to manage them. And thus, then that is the project. We there was an employment of 5 data capturers as well as 1 senior data capturer to actually work on that project to try and clear out the issues of lease, because there were issues in terms of particulars which needed to actually be audited, so that then we have a clear lease portfolio, because there were issues where in some instances the drawings in some were not 100% similar to the initial drawing, and thus then we had to clean out that process. So basically that would have been the one that contributed to that, because that is a new project that was actually to deal with it. I think I take the note that in future we would need to put what the budget for the goods and services was per item, and then that's the expenditure, so that then we'll be in a position to see whether there has been over expenditure or it's going according to line, or it's actually balanced in terms of what was initially planned for. I think I would request Chairperson and honorable members that moving forward we present that in that format.
Any other follow-ups on the first questions raised?
On your finances, you have said in your report that the annual budget for administration was 78 million. The fourth quarter budget was 44 million. Then the fourth quarter actual spending was 16. I was just confused by this 78 million annual budget and fourth quarter 44 million. Can this be clarified? The traditional council support, the annual budget was 30 million. Then the fourth quarter budget, what is this number? 7692827.50. And the actual spending was 1.4 million. Can please clarify those figures? I think the issue of the overspending on the CEO is by 115.33 in the fourth quarter. It has been explained, the issue of the data capture, but PFMA is clear on these matters of overspending and underspending. 115% overspending. Maybe we need to get a detailed report on this. How many data capturers were appointed, and how much each was getting? Just an explanation that led to this 115% overspending. The other issue is just brief explanations on this, the capital expenditure. You know, sometimes they're confusing us. You put these furnitures and computers under goods and services. Sometimes you change it to be capital
What is capital expenditure? Maybe if we can start from there. If we talk of the capital expenditure, what are we talking about? So that we move with the same understanding. On the fourth quarter, board members' remuneration, 1.6 million in one quarter, 3 months. Can you unpack this? Travel and accommodation and meetings, 901, close to a million. Fourth quarter. It means that if we're talking of the annual financial performance, it should be around 4 million. Payment to community beneficiaries, the 1.2 million. Fourth quarter. How many beneficiaries were paid out of this 1.2 million and how much each? And from which traditional council? Bursaries, 255,000. I think we have to improve on this one. There's no way we can fight or can deal with the unemployment, lack of skilling, without supporting the young people, without empowering the youth. So if we spend 255,000 looking at the cost of education, because one day we have asked you, how much are you paying for each student? Are you paying the registration fee? Or are you paying all the costs? Registration, tuition, accommodation, what is it? Because looking at this 255,000 vis-a-vis the number of people you are supporting. CEO, are we charging at least this year? But in Baniga and Lavanton, Baniga is 10,000 each, or in Baniga, Nizanjanla. Honorable Mguni, you are welcome. Over to you, CEO. Honorable Papa.
Thank you, Chair. I think in terms of your questions, it's what I was trying to say on the schedule of goods and services. If you had actually written the budget there, we would see where you have overspent or underspent. And then we would not have so many questions in terms of the actual line items. You understand what I'm saying? Because the budget was approved initially. So if you are not over budget or whatever, then the questions will not come. But the questions are coming now because we don't have a comparison in terms of percentages and the figure to see. And also in terms of your schedule of revenue, there's a rental income budget versus actual income, which is quite astronomical. In figures like this, I would have expected you to have explanations. I'm not sure if I might not have seen it. If I didn't see it, then I apologize. But all your figures in terms of the income are quite high. So you are way, way, way over budget in terms of income, which is a good thing. But I would feel that we should have explanations for each line item there.
Honorable Ngoni.
Thank you so much, Chair. I did forward apology and I forwarded once again other than the other technicalities, but on the restitution thing, I'm just trying to wrap it up before we rise tomorrow. Chair, I'm just writing on your question, Chair. There's what the accounting gurus call the SCOA, scope of accounting. In answering your question, Chair, I would love the ITB to indicate if they are working in relation to that. Are they using that schedule, or do they have some other form of accounting that they use? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. On the issue of the bursaries, I'm going to start there. The bursaries would vary. Maybe let me just start there. The bursary awards would vary because we have got two categories of bursary awards. We have those that come directly from the traditional councils based on the funds that we collect either from their leases, and then they would then indicate, give us a list of the students that they would have identified within the TC in order for them to receive the awards. That is based on the traditional council resolution, and the amounts thereof are based on the traditional council resolution. For this particular quarter, I'm aware that we had, I think, in excess of five traditional councils, or four or five. It was Bejane TC, Somopo TC, Zungu TC, Nsinde TC. I can't remember on top of my head what the other one was. And the amounts varied. In the TC, for example, they gave each child 10,000 rands, and Somopo gave each child 5,000 rands. So that varied across the board, because that's based on funds that are available, that are collected for that particular TC, that's available in terms of them being dispersed back to the community. So in that way, from the board side, we're not in a position to actually control that, because that's informed by the amount that they have in the kitty that belongs to that particular TC. The one that is written 255,000, on that one we give each student 25,000. That's the approved amount per the board. The reason why you'd have seen that the total amount, 25,000 per child or per student, the reason why it would, because the allocation that was available at the time, I'm subject to correction, I think it was 425,000. We had given them the initial amount, but the approved amount is the full amount per student. But the initial amount was paid, and then we're pending the universities to give us the balances. Either they would be a technical college, a university, or any. So we paid the initial amount, which was for registration and the initial cost. And I recall each child or each student initially got 15,000, and then we requested the institutions to give us the balances in order to pay the final balance. So I think as at year end, that balance had not been paid as at the, because that comes from the trust budget. So basically, I'm subject to him correcting me whether the balance was paid in April. In terms of payment to community beneficiaries, I would request that we forward that report, because I wouldn't know on top of my head how many community beneficiaries were paid, how much each was paid, and from which TC. I'm not in a position to actually indicate that now up front, because I think that we'll have to go back to the schedule of payments and then do a schedule and then forward that to the board. In terms of the meetings vary in terms of meetings that are held. In some instances, it's meetings to TCs. In some instances, it is because I know the workshop was held in May, but in March and April, it would be various meetings. And can I, because I don't want to speculate now, because we are in June, and I might not be in a position to recall all meetings that were held, and can I request that we forward those meetings. With regard to board members' remuneration, there is a stipulated amount that board members get paid for their professional services, and that is determined by the department. And also linked to that, we must also be aware of the fact that, I think the committee is aware of the fact that the board now, for the first time, has got a full board. Because since 2015, I don't think they had a full board. I don't think they had 9 members. And there is also issues of traveling, because the board members that existed then were mainly from eThekwini and Pietermaritzburg. But now we've got board members that come from close to Falkrest, Mhlabeyalingana, down south, and the traveling cost also, they contribute to the payments or the remuneration of the board. Because even in terms of their stay, if they are coming for board meetings or ExCom meetings or tenor meetings, they've got to be booked in terms of accommodation because of the vastness of the province in terms of where they come from. So basically, to a very large extent, that's where you'll see a vast difference in terms of the previous expenditure that has been related to board payments to the current, because one, some of them come from far and wide in the province, and they will have to obviously sleep over for meetings, which are standard meetings that happen more or less, most of them they happen monthly. And any other meeting that's required over and above those monthly meetings. Capital expenditure is, as a chairperson would understand, is any capital equipment. But you are likely, chairperson and portfolio committee members, to find it both on goods and services as well as capital. In the sense that if, for example, computer equipment, as you're saying, if you're paying for licenses for computers, that is not capital. That is under your goods and services. So it will be those things that are like that you then end up finding under goods and services, and in some instances finding them under capital expenditure as well. So it would have those things. And maybe I think in future we might have to just write a footnote to say this was due to based on licenses and this, so that then it's clear for the portfolio committee members. I think I take note of the detailed report on the overspending on the 115% that the chairperson is requesting for a detailed report on that. We'll provide that. And I would request, and the schedule of revenue and the issue of question by Honorable Ngozi.
Are you not noting down which questions are you supposed to respond to? Chairperson of the Deputy Chair of the Board.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe I just wanted to be clear that in terms of overspending on salaries, on employee compensation, it's 115%, but the overspend is actually 15%, not necessarily 115% of what should have been spent. I'm trying to explain that. It was 15% overspending in terms of what we were supposed to spend on compensation. And I think, as CEO has explained, it was mainly due to the data capturers that were employed on a short-term contract to assist us with clearing some of the backlog that we had and getting information, all the relevant information that was required. I think we appreciate the member, Honorable Hildane, the fact that we need to be providing services that will benefit the people. it may not always be obvious in terms of what we do, what benefits actually accrue to the people. I'm not going to talk about bursaries and agricultural projects. But if I may start with the agricultural projects that we have, there are benefits to the people there. But it's also a case to say we have capacity constraints around that. We don't have the staff to actually go out to all the communities and actually offer the support for them to have agricultural projects as much as we would like to do. Hence the partnerships and the agreements, MOAs, that we try to sign, for example, with Adoma Peaks and ADA, Agricultural Development Agency, that we have in KZN. So it may not always be apparent, but we also have... It's clear that we have capacity constraints around that in terms of agricultural projects. We employed an agricultural official, but he left, and whoever we're using now, who are using staff that are not necessarily trained agricultural projects, but are getting support from whoever can assist. We do try and liaise with the Department of Agriculture or the in some of the projects, but it's not always possible because they also have their own projects. I would also like to respond to Honorable Madela in terms of these 10 rights that we speak about. What are the benefits to the people? I think some of the land where you see like high figures of people actually applying from the leases, it's actually the TC, it's actually even the municipality encouraging them to say, rather than settling informally, and those would be areas that are very near urban areas, peri-urban areas, so you're getting informal settlements, and therefore the provision of services is going to be very difficult. So they invite ITB to say, we have these people, these are the allocations that we are making as the traditional council. And we've got to send surveyors to actually survey a piece of land for each of that person so that they know exactly where they, what site they occupy and the size of the site that they have to occupy. And adding to that, we have these surveyors and even other officials that travel the whole province. And when they travel, it's travel but also accommodation. Because if they've got to leave from Maritzburg to travel to Komhlabuyalingana, let's say to Manguzi, that's a 4 or 5 hour trip, and they can't come back on the same day. We try and arrange is that they actually stay over so that they can do more work in those districts. So the vastness of the province really makes it very expensive in terms of the expenditure on accommodation, but also on travel. I think that's all I wanted to add. I think the rest has been covered. Thank you.
While you're busy caucusing there, the issue raised by Honorable Nguni, you have not responded to that. But I just want to comment on a few issues based on your responses. The issue of the understaffing of ITB. Why each and every time when you talk, you refer to the vastness of the ITB area, vastness of the ITB area. CEO, what is the reason not to recruit people based on the vastness of the area so that you allocate them to avoid this traveling and accommodation? You know the setting of the ITB land. For instance, we've got lots of agricultural graduates, unemployed for that matter. They have an association now which is trying to get them or to find them jobs, you know. There are lots of people staying there, but each and every time when you respond, the vastness of the ITB area, the vastness, understaffed. But I ask myself, what is the reason for you not to review your organogram
and try to accommodate other people. Because if you recruit based on the, you know, the vastness of the area, recruit people to work in their districts or whatever, you can reduce some of the cost. But on the other side, especially the cost of traveling and accommodation. But on the other side, what is the reason for you not to recruit? Because looking at the money that you are generating, but each and every time understaffed, capacity constraints, whatever, CEO. Are you with us,
ma'am? Ma'am Chairperson, and portfolio committee members, the allocation we get from the department is minimal. And that is the money that is mainly to pay for staff. And basically that's the issue at hand. We don't have enough budget because the monies that we collect are for communities. So it's the issue of a budget, Chairperson, at this point in time.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, just trying to answer. Okay. One of the questions was that for the slide, why was administration so high? For the fourth quarter, the budget was sitting at 44 million. The reason for that was that because of non-routine expenditure. For instance, depreciation, it will be taken in the fourth quarter. Provision for doubtful debts, that will also be taken in the fourth quarter. Okay. And the other one was capital expenditure. You wanted to know how we define capital expenditure. Basically, the capital expenditure is something that's tangible, being the furniture, the equipment, and stuff like that. And the intangible part of the capital expenses will be like software and website design. And the items where you see computer or furniture, it relates to the expenditure. Like for instance, the licensing on the computer, or the general maintenance of the computer, but it's not of a capital nature. Okay. And then one of the other questions is that you wanted to know why was rental income so high? The reason being is because there was much more leases that came into play. There was much more money that came. There was money that came through, and that is why there was it exceeded the budget. And the other one is that. The honourable member raised the question of SCOA, whether we are using the standard chartered templates of accounts. We are using standard templates. But in regard to the financials, we are using GRAP. So the question on whether we're using the standard chart of accounts, for SCOA, the standard account, for the templates, we aren't really, you know, going with those templates, but it's a consideration to be taken into account, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Honourable Mguni, then Honourable Papa, Honourable Madela. Sorry, I have to.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the responses. I just want to state from the onset, Chair, that
My earlier observation that ITB's format is compliant and should really be copied admirably by the parent department and any other department or state organ still stands. I stand by that observation, Chair, even in the documentation now before us. And that is why now I'm able to zoom down to the question about SCOA, because if you were reporting haywire, we would never even be able to get you. Chair, my question was kind of an extension of your question, because you were then asking about computers that appear under this and under that. And SCOA, I do know, has been in existence for over a decade now, at least, or I've been aware about it for over a decade. So I am not sure, accountant, or sorry, your designation, I am not sure why it should take you so long before you are certain that you are using it. Because under the Treasury, there is a specific manual, accounting manual for departments, the Standard Chart of Accounts and Systems. I think you are aware, and I think that's what you're talking about. And if you follow that to the letter, there should be no duplication, so that when the chair asks the question about computers being under this or under that, that standard chart would have led you directly to where it should actually fit in. I do, Chair, pick up the aspect about software versus hardware. But I am not sure if the issue is really there. I thought the issue was us trying to make sure ITB as a whole, now that we're not evasive in how we respond and in how we plan our finances and how we do our work. That would be my point. Maybe it's just a comment, Chair, but there can't be a situation where you are still grappling with whether to use it or not. There's a manual. If I'm asked to produce it for you, I will gladly. I'm non-financial, but certain basics I do know. So I would gladly produce it for you, and next time you come around, yourself or the CFO himself, Mr. I would then expect that you would be compliant fully, and there would be no issues parked here or there. Thank you.
Mine is just a comment, Chair. The accountant said that the rental income is that high, actually 569 over, because of lease agreements. This is quite surprising to me. Were you not expecting these lease agreements? How could you budget such a small amount, knowing that you had a building that could be leased? I don't quite understand it. I understand the fact that it's great to have that income, but I'm just worried about the competency of budgeting.
Thank you, Chair. Just two questions, Chair. One is a question of clarification with regard to the bursaries, Chair. I understood the CEO to indicate that the TEC's traditional councils also make allocations. They identify recipients of bursaries. One would assume that money comes from the TEC's. The question that I just have, Chair, is that the board, the ITB, also budget and plan and allocate for bursaries. But when they report comprehensively our bursaries, that includes the TECs, etc. Now, I'm not quite sure whether that is correct, because it then means if they single out the expenditure of the TECs in relation to educational awards, there are obviously other expenditures of the TECs also. Why singling out item alone, Chair? It then must then be reflected as such. It's the thesis. But more importantly, Chair, I think as indicated earlier by colleagues, Deputy Chair, the amount even up 25,000 rand is very, very little. Is the average cost of study at any university for 1 year is in excess of 50,000 rand. And here we are talking about 25,000. One is not even quite sure whether it's 25,000 a year or is it 25,000 for the whole duration of the course, Chair. If one speaks about TVET colleges, then clearly that could be more or less in line, but universities not so much. And so one would want to urge the ITB to really review that a policy, Chair, in terms of allocation of bursaries, because it must be, if I live on a ITB land and my child get 25,000 rand, and I want them to become a doctor, it will never help at all. That will be even insufficient for registration, I'd say. But the other question also, and this is now in response to what the CEO was saying, that the cost of employers is coming from the budget, coming from the department. You know, that actually raises a concern with me, Chair. The AG at one time, I think that last year, raised this issue that, and we as a committee have accepted that together with ITB, that it should actually, when there's reporting done, it should be reporting for the board and reporting for the trust. What we have here is literally, to an extent, an integrated report. It's a reporting of both. You know, so it doesn't come out very, very clearly. You know, that distinction is not there, and it will be helpful that when reporting is done, that it's been done in a manner that that has been agreed to with the Auditor General Chairperson, so that we indeed in our oversight look at it from that particular angle. Because the concern is now just that I was picking up that when the question is about this, then they said no, but the money that the department is giving is too little, because that money is meant to cover X, Y, and Z. And then the money that we got in is too much. We did not anticipate we'll get so much money. So it's actually contradictory, Chairperson. But moreover, if I may, having the platform, the issue of over-expenditure of salaries, Chair, one, even despite the Deputy Chair, despite, notwithstanding the fact that you have had a specific project, one could not accept easily that the whole employee budget could be utilized, given the fact that there are so many vacancies, Chair. What happens to the cost that has been set aside for those posts? It's funded posts. It's not, unless we are saying that the moment the vacancy arose, then that portion of the budget for that vacancy, which is a funded post, is now immediately re-diverted somewhere else. You know, so one would want to assume that there should have been monies left over that could have been utilized otherwise. But I'm happy that the Deputy Chair corrected the presentation to say it's not 150%, 15% over expenditures. Actually, as you said, 15%. That makes much more sense, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Listening to the responses to the various questions that my colleagues have put across, what comes out is that there is a critical shortage of appropriate planning on the part of the ITB. I'm saying this because, like I said earlier, 90% of their expenditure goes to supporting services, and it's only 10% that goes to the actual services. They've explained accept the explanation. But what pricks me to come up with this comment again is the fact that repeatedly they account for poor service by saying that they are short-staffed. Now, how do you plan to do what they are supposed to do with only one training officer, when just about every piece or area would need someone to train, you know, to train those communities? So my submission, Chair, is that perhaps ITB should submit to us their total operational plan, actual operational plan. That's where we'll be able to see, and in that, they should please indicate where they think they will be short of staff. Because I think they need someone to guide them. It may not necessarily be us. That's not exactly what we're here to do. But I think they would need someone to indicate to them which critical posts need to be filled in order for them to get the ball rolling. Otherwise, we'll be asking them a million questions here, and we're not going to get anywhere. This is before they submit to us their, you know, annual results. We're dealing with the first quarter, so they are in a position to look at what they've been able to do throughout the 12 months. And so based on that, they are able to say, this is how we intend rolling out our plans going forward. Otherwise, we're going to face a similar consequence, you know, for this current financial year. Let's just be able to critique their operational plan so that we see where we need to advise them as to how to go about their business. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe starting with Honorable Fulton. Thank you, Honorable Member, for the comments. The plan was already tabled to the Portfolio Committee on the 9th of May 2017. Then the issue of maybe going back to Honorable Mandela. We take note of the fact that the Honourable Member is saying we need to review the amount on the bursaries that are being awarded to the TC. We'll take that back to the board for consideration. The posts that were actually vacant in terms of the staff structure are two. Is the Deputy Manager Administration and the Real Estate Manager. So those were the mainly two posts that were actually vacant. On the issue of bursaries issued by TCs, I think we also take note of the fact that the Honourable Member is suggesting that whilst we show that the TCs have done, have issued our bursaries, we might as well have to look at what other things they have also done. So we take note of that. And maybe also going back to Honourable Babama, thank you. The issue of over-collection, maybe if one is to put it that way, this in some instances is created by the fact that some other companies, like if you are in the commercial sector, they decide to pay once a year in terms of their annual rental that they need to pay for whatever lease they have. And whilst you would have projected on a monthly basis and then they sit, they don't pay, and then once, boom, you've got 6 million, you've got 7 million at once. So which becomes quite difficult then to actually manage the process from a rental point of view. Thank you.
Honorable members, I think we... all the questions were responded to. But before we conclude this session, can I just make an emphasis on few issues here? The consistency in reporting. We're expecting two reports of the board and the trust, even the financial performance, and it must be done. Otherwise, if there's one report, it means that that report is incomplete. We have to turn you back to go and write another report, because we don't want to deal with the issues in piecemeals. So we need to be fully informed, CEO, about what is happening in regards to the board and also the trust. Secondly, the issue of the shifting of targets, as I've raised it, is a concern. The delay in the implementation of your plans, also a concern. And the delay in the finalization of some of the policies is a concern. You raised an issue where you indicated that the reason for you not to spend on rural development is because of the capacity of the TCs. But we have been emphasizing this matter even when looking at the report of the committee. We have been emphasizing the matter of ITP working together with local municipalities, because that will be easier. All these TCs, they fall under municipalities and they've got the IDPs. So what makes it difficult for ITP to know that the need of this TC is this one, the need of this TC is this one? Because all those TCs, they're not just hanging in the vacuum, but they are belonging to certain municipalities. Each and every ward, they are belonging to wards. Each and every ward has got the IDP. So just look at the working together with the local municipalities, looking at the IDP will inform you what is the need of that particular area. But if you decide to work in silos, you're going to experience this problem of underspending on rural development. And we're not going to accept it as this committee. When talking of rural development, we mean it, that there should be change in the lives of the people in rural areas. So we don't expect any underspending on rural development. I think that one must be clear. We've been raising the issue of people with disabilities several times in this meeting, but it's not being taken seriously. Because you don't get, you know, the exact picture. How are they benefiting from these educational awards? Because you have to guide, as ITB, you have to guide the TC. That makes sure when you assist or you support youth from your area, make sure that there are youth with disabilities who are part of, who are going to benefit from the support that you're providing. But as long as you don't have policies, you will not be able to guide the TCs, because even yourself as ITP, as the mother of those TCs, you can't answer the question how many people with disabilities have benefited from this. It's difficult for you to explain that. So how do you expect then the TCs to do that if the motherboard of the TC is failing to implement that? And that must be taken seriously. I think when you're coming to report next time, we need to hear something different on this matter. The other issue is the issue of, I don't know, how is your working relationship, CEO, with your TCs? As you have mentioned, that you know, you don't know their programs, especially their festive programs, because if there's a close working relationship, you're supposed to know that. That they are closing on this date, they will be opening on this date, that will guide your planning. But if you're saying we're not sure of the, you know, the closing dates during festive of the thesis, how do you communicate with them? How often do you sit down with them and discuss some of these issues, so that at the end of the day, you are being assisted as ITP when doing your planning? Then the other issue is the issue of the overspending. Whether it's 15% or 5%, but the PFMA is clear. Doesn't say you must overspend by this percent or whatever, but you must work according to the resources that you have. And vireaments must be done according to the PFMA prescripts, if there are any vireaments. I think overspending on rural development. It's not allowed, but if there's a portfolio of evidence that this overspending is based on this school or whatever that we have done for this community, but any over or underspending while people need service delivery in your own area will not be tolerated. We'll be awaiting the outstanding information which will clarify the number of beneficiaries that have been paid out of this 1 point something million based on your report, how much each beneficiary have received and from which traditional council. And also the information on the overspending on the compensation of employees. I think members have just emphasized the issue of the reviewal of your education policy. As you have indicated that the TCs are also providing, assisting financially as ITP. You have to work together with the TCs, because if TCs are giving these people 25,000, maybe as ITP you have to top up, rather than coming with a different thing while the others are being funded, you know, but not fully funded. But you have to sit down and review this policy and come out with something that will be presented to this committee. Based on the cost of education, as members have indicated, that the cost of education at the colleges is not the same as the ones at the university level. So whatever assistance you're providing, you must make sure that you assist those students or those young people fully for them to be able to complete their studies. Because maybe some of them, you've assisted them, but they are now dropouts. How do you track on them? Whether they are still at school or they've dropped out due to financial constraints. So I think you have to sit down, CEO, and review this policy of bursaries. Honorable members, thank you very much. Also, thank you very much, Deputy Chair and the CEO. Let's have the 5 minutes break then and come back for the second session. Thank you very much. Opportunity to the department to make the presentation on the agricultural land holding account. We are aware that when department is transferring money, they make some transfers to ITB and also to ALHA. So in most cases, when they report, they just touch the issue of ALHA. We've decided that we need to engage into details with this ALHA. I think members are aware that the money that is being transferred is the money that is used to buy the state land and being leased to the people who want the land for farming. Let me then take this opportunity and give it to Mr. Southgate. I think you are the leader, the CFO. CFO, the leader of the delegation. Our ears are wide open to hear what is it that they're going to tell us about this. And over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question. Am I still going to present the department or just ALHA? The request is the, both the department and ALHA.
To today is Allah. Tomorrow is the department fourth quarterly performance report. Tomorrow.
No,
but now it's Allah.
Thank you, Chair. We have prepared the presentation as requested. However, I would pray to the Chair that the time that we were given to prepare, because we received the request on Thursday, it was too short for us to go deeper if you look at the things that were requested. So I'm praying to the Chair that if opportunities are given again for us to present this kind of report, we would request at least a week to prepare this kind of report. But we have tried our best. The table of contents, we were requested to touch on the legislative and policy context for ALA. So we have put the overview of the policy and the criteria and the processes for identification of farms to be acquired and selection of beneficiaries and the governance of the trading entity. On the implementation of MTEF priorities for ALA, we have put the key performance indicators and milestones. In fact, I think we implementation progress versus the predetermined objectives, expenditure trends, patterns for 2015 and 2016 financial year, and the audit outcomes and recommendations for the previous financial year, the implement recommendations for the auditor, how far are we? And on the implementation progress for the lease management and transfer of farms, we have statistical information of farms acquired under the ALA since 2009, because that's when the entity started operating, and we have put that by province. On the policy implications, key challenges arising from ALA and solutions and proposed interventions for mitigation. On the next page, we've got the overview of policies guiding the ALA. The first one is the PLUS, or the provision of the provision of Land and Assistance Act. And the central objective of this act is to give effect to the state and constitutional obligation to undertake land reform. The central objective of the provision of Land and Assistance Act of 1993, Act number 126, is to give effect to the state constitutional obligation to undertake land reform, to promote the sustainable use and development of land acquired by the state for land reform purposes. We want to contribute to poverty alleviation, and we want to promote economic growth and empowerment of historically disadvantaged individuals. Continuing on the overview of the policies guiding ALA, we've got policy number two, which is recapitalization and development policy framework. This policy seeks to provide black emerging farmers with social and economic infrastructure and the resources to successfully run agricultural business with the following strategic focus areas. We want to rekindle the class of black farmers destroyed by the 1913 and 1936 Land Act. The second is to combat poverty, unemployment, and income inequality. And the third one is to reduce the tide of rural urban immigration. This policy is particularly against the following three things: supporting people who have got the means to develop their land, and proxy farmers being the people who run their own businesses in towns and in cities but employ managers to run their farms, and failed farmers who want to make fortune from disbursements that are meant to fairly compensate strategic partners for work done. Then we've got the third policy being the State Land Disposal Act of 1961, Act Number 48, which empowers the department to lease state land. On the criteria that we use when we identify the farmers to be acquired and the selection of beneficiaries, on the identification side, we've got the public process that we undertake. We issue notices requesting expression of interest out at municipal notice boards and other public spaces frequented by people in to consider the applications. We advertise in local media, information dissemination at farmers' meetings. Selections must be a transparent process. It's one of the criteria. Secretariat services provide the departmental officials at both levels. District beneficiary selection committee screen all beneficiaries in the district and make a recommendation to the DLRC and NLAC. The DLRC was only instituted last financial year. Prior to that, we were using district technical committees to do this work. Now we use the DLRC. The district beneficiary selection committee, established as a subcommittee of the DLRC, envisaged in the NDP, and the DLRC recommends the potential beneficiary to NLAC and Recapitalization Control Committee via PLAC, which is our provincial land allocation committee, and the CRDP fora. The identification and selection of beneficiaries for strategic support by the department is premised on the categories targeted groups as outlined in the policy. The percentage allocation of land is determined by the department based on the baseline budget that we receive from the National Treasury. This is just those steps that I was outlining in the previous page. This is just now how it flows from beginning to end, from phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, and phase five. This process can take up to 4 months to finalize for one farm. The governance of ALA, the structures that we have, ALA reports to me. I'm the head of the entity. And I report on their behalf on our National Joint Strategic Committee, which is the management committee. And the Executive Management Committee, which includes now the political head and the Audit Committee and this Portfolio Committee. In addition to that, when it comes to the approvals for land acquisition and the one household, 1 hectare, and the recapitalization that we are closing off, there is this are the following are the structures that does the approval, from the application to approval of the land acquisition or the allocation of a farm or the approval of the one household, 1 hectare program or the recapitalization. We've got the District Land Reform Committee and the Provincial Technical Committee and the National Land Allocation and the Recapitalization Committee, the National Technical Committee and the MCM, which is chaired by the minister. So the applications will start at a district level and they move to the province and the National Allocation Committee, and then to the NTC, which would recommend concurrence by the minister. The NLAC is the one that approves. The minister concurs through the MCM. The key performance indicators and predetermined objectives for 2015-2016. On the far left, we've got the hectares acquired. The first blue block would be the annual target that we had ourselves. The one that looks orange is the actual, and the variance is on that light blue. So in 2015-2016, the target was 370,000 hectares. We did not reach that target. We have achieved 222,640, so we were short 147,360,000 hectares. And of that 222 of the hectares that we acquired, we allocated the hectares to smallholder farmers, of which the target was 185,000. We only allocated 102,267, and we were short by 82,713. Hectares allocated to farm dwellers and labor tenants, the target was 37,000. We allocated 9,313, and we were short 27,687 hectares. On the key performances and predetermined objectives for 2015-2016, we have number of pilot farms on policy of strengthening of relative rights. The target was 10, and we achieved 7. We were short 3. On the number of plus farms identified for incubation and training of agricultural graduates, the target was 13. We did 14. Here we overachieved by 1. On the land reform funds recapitalized and developed, the annual target was 496. We achieved 402 and we short 94. On the jobs created under the land reform projects or the area ADP, the target was 994. We created 2,243. So we overachieved by 1,249 jobs. Farms, persons trained through the recapitalization program, the target was 994. We achieved 734. And 250 was still outstanding at year end. On the expenditure trends, the budget for 20, on the left hand side is the budget, and on the right hand side I've got the spending. So I will alternate between the two graphs. During 2015-2016, the budget for land acquisition was 1,030,000. We spent 1,007,000. On the recapitalization, the budget was 496 million. We spent 420 million. Sorry, we spent 463 million. And on planning, we had 16 million. We spent 14 million. That is on the year 15-16. On year 16-17, you can see the budget of land acquisition decreased from a billion to just over half a billion. It's because we introduced the thing of relative rights program, which was not funded. So we had to shift around the monies to try and implement the policy as per the State of the Nation address and the minister's budget speech. So the land acquisition was 577 million.
we spent 603 million. The over expenditure was compensated by the recapitalization. You will see that recapitalization, we had budgeted 420 and we spent 401 million. And on relative strengthening of relative rights, we set aside 500 million and we spent 418 million on it. So we did the variance at year end just to make sure that where we had over expenditure, we make it good. So in total, the budget was 3.1 billion, of which we spent 2.9995 billion, almost 3 billion. And we had a surplus of 159 million that we are going to, we actually have already written letters to the National Treasury to retain, because we've got quite a lot of commitments on recapitalization that we would need to use that money for, and commitments on the strengthening of relative rights. On the audit outcomes for 15-16, we got a clean audit on ALA. 16-17, we are still pending. They are busy auditing. On the audit outcomes of the last financial year, we have done everything. What I've left here is the things that are still in the progress of being implemented. One is the impairment of trade receivables on the lease debt. Prior to November 2014, the state land lease and disposal policy was amended such that we changed the criteria for the determination of the rental values to the 5% of the net income receipts. And as a process of trying to implement that, then there was a moratorium that the Treasury supported that will allow farmers to prepare themselves in terms of their bookkeeping and what have you not, so that they can then do the business plans for us to be able to determine the lease. Now, prior to that period, there was a whole lot of lease that was outstanding. So this refers to that, the debt before 2013 November, that we have not been able to collect sufficiently. Last year, we hired a service provider to do the credit control function for us because the debt was already over the policy time frame. It was already bad debt. There were farmers who complied and they really paid us our money, but others just thought I. So we are in the process of trying to come up with a method of whether do we blacklist or what do we do, considering that we also are a developmental, this is a developmental program. And sometimes perhaps if you blacklist someone, they might not be able to continue to farm it. Also, we're looking at what are the best possible ways of us to try and get our money or I don't know how to explain it, something that would make sure that we don't continue to support and we try and get the money, although most of them don't seem like we will be able to get that money. So we're not certain on how much we will be able to recover from this debt. We have done the debt assessment process, and the debt assessment process had categories. There were categories that when we assess, we can see this one is a commercial and pay us, is actually is making a profit out of this whole process. The farm is farmable, the productivity is good. Those are the ones that I'm considering either to go through the legal route of doing litigation or to do a blacklisting, and all of them has got the positive and the negative. and litigation is too expensive for the department. In case this person never pays us, we will lose quite a lot of money. Whereas on the blacklisting also, it might be disadvantageous to the farmer. So we're doing that assessment. And the other categories were either people that have already passed on, so those ones we are writing off, or those ones that the farms are not working at all, which we are recommending that we must perhaps implement what we saw Zimbabwe implementing yesterday. They are repossessing unproductive farms. Maybe we must also start to follow that route so that we don't continue to waste resources on farms that are just sitting there at our expense of food for the country and creating employment, economic activity in this economic climate. The second one is the impairment of receivable from non-exchange transactions. Those are grants. This is where we have given recapitalization. You remember when we give recapitalization, we don't require payment, but we require that a farmer must give us a receipt to show that they have expended their money that we have given them according to the business plan that was approved. Now, this one is a bit challenging. Farmers go out there, they spend the money. When accountability comes, they don't account. We again have sent teams to go and do this thing of recovering the money. It's just not working. So even here, we did our consultation with the state attorney who said the debt itself cannot prescribe. It's a government debt. I think it goes to 15 years before it can prescribe. And again, we are looking at ways on how do we then try and get the money. The book on this is almost 700 million. We also are not sure if we'll get this money. We've got a project management unit that has been appointed to assist farmers with accounting for the disbursement of funds. There are those that really is just a challenge of not having the financial management skills, so they don't know. So those ones we are helping with getting the accountants to assist them. But there are those that are just unscrupulous. They just are playing us. They don't account. We are also pursuing the litigation process against those grants that have been unaccounted for. But again, we're not sure if we'll get anything. I think this I instituted when I came in. This is now almost 2 years that we've been doing. At the beginning, we showed those that were genuine accounted, because when the creditors control guys followed up on them, they could account, but then just didn't. With the current debt, we have seen quite an improvement. So this is mostly old debt that we found when we came into the department. With the new ones, there is an improvement in terms of accounting, and perhaps it's because there's not too big a time frame before we start doing the follow-ups. On the statistical information of the land acquisition on 15-16 per province, Eastern Cape acquired 41,868 hectares against the projection of 15,000. A Free State, 23,000. And across the board, you can see that the target we are not achieving in terms of the acquisition. The blue is the target and the red is the achievement. So across the board, you see that those that achieved, you're looking at KZN that achieved, and Northern Cape, the rest did not achieve the target. We've got the DDG of land reform with us, and the reasons that I'm not touching on, he will explains the reason around the non-achievement of the targets when it comes to operations. 2016-2017 land acquisition, again, Eastern Cape did not achieve, Free State did not achieve, Gauteng did not, KZN again they achieved, and this time Limpopo also achieved, and Mpumalanga did not, Northern Cape achieved. We saw that even the prior year, them and KZN achieved, and Northwest almost equilibrium, and Western Cape did not achieve. On the farms acquired from 2009, the total is 3,441 farms. We acquired them at a cost of 8.3 billion, and the total hectares we acquired is 1.6 million hectares. And there's the list per province. Average term of lease and average cost of lease. I must say we, until the current financial year, which being 2017-2018 financial year, we have been struggling with the implementation of leases based on the policy, which was not easy to implement. When you say the farmers should give me 5% of the net income, and we know that the process of monitoring and evaluation, it's not easy where you have given a leeway to say, tell me whether you have made a loss or you have made a profit. So this year, we have changed the policy to say a category 1 and 2 and 3, they will give us 1% of the cost of the land as our rental. So it's now firm, as opposed to you telling us whether you have income for this year, because we have seen that the business plan comes with unreasonable projections, and almost all the leases are almost zero because everybody tells you, I won't make a profit. So we've changed the policy to make it firm on the cost that we have incurred in acquiring the farms, which is being 1%, and on the 50-50 farms is 2%. And on the labor tenants and the farm dwellers is zero. I think it's 1 rand per annum. We're hoping that then what we have done is set up a project management unit that is running with ensuring that every farmer has a lease by at least end of September. We're busy now in terms of the project management plan. We are changing the system that we use to administer the land to now be able to generate the leases directly from the system. So every land will be linked to a lease agreement, and we hope to finish that process by September 2017. This is just the statistics that we have currently. Average term of lease on 30 years, you can see we only have 200. You've seen that I have thousands of farms that I've acquired. But in terms of the leases, and on the annual average cost of lease, we've got 5.5 million, and the total percentage of leases up to date, you can see it's very low. And we've got the categories there. On the rent value that we have invested, we've got 444 billion, million, sorry, and for 15-16, and for 16-17 is 336 million. On recap, the one for the current year is we are trying to close out. We won't finish this year because we know recap runs for 5 years, so we'll be closing out as we go. Thank you.
Mr. Sotkit, any additions? Mr. Zulu. Honorable members, can we talk to...
Before you give us, dear Chair, I thought that CFO was saying there's something that the DDG for land reform is going to...
Challenges.
Yeah. And now when you ask them to add, there's no addition. So it means the CFO must go back to give that report or somebody must add. I just thought it's a procedural issue, Chair. Thanks.
Are there any additions? There's none.
No. Thank you, Chairperson and other members. I don't have additions necessarily, except to say that in terms of the reasons for performance in the departmental presentation tomorrow, they are well covered in terms of your 2016-17 financial year. Yeah. But for your 15-16, I think the CFO touched on the issue of the cut on the budget, yet the targets were already there. But what you have also noticed is that there is an inconsistency in terms of performance across the provinces. There are a number of reasons for that, especially if you look at the Eastern Cape, which is for the past 2 years, there are non-performance. I think the reasons are that we, for a long time in the Eastern Cape, we didn't have the director land acquisition, which we are filling now. This financial year, we've got interviews scheduled for this month. That was the issue there. And then in the main, if you look at also Gauteng, you will see that even though Gauteng, they had they did not achieve the target, but they did not achieve their target. You and also in the next financial year as well, the trend continued. Although Free State, they have improved in the last financial year, unlike your Gauteng. There are a number of reasons, Chairperson, but I think we can also provide those reasons because in the performance, overall performance, in the annual performance report that was presented, the reasons are there in terms of what happened in terms of performance in the 2015-16. I don't want to contradict myself because that one was documented and approved, verified and approved in terms of the reasons for underperformance across the branch in terms of operations. But I think maybe one thing to clarify is that when the CFO was presenting, the trading entity is under her, is under the CFO. But in terms of the performance targets, which relates to operations, in issues of land acquisition, issues of recap, is done under the branch land redistribution and development. But then the third sphere is that when you talk of leases, the lease management and these other issues in terms of the finalization of leases, then we add that branch, which is branch land tenure and administration, that deals with that part. So my part is on the issues of the targets and also the what you call the performance on the recap that is on these particular farms that we've acquired and transferred to and hold under the Alhas trading entity. But the last thing is that the other thing which was in effect on the 2015-16, you remember you saw the annual target was 370,000 hectares. That was in line with the MTSF. Remember the MTSF was asking us to have transferred 2 million hectares. That was the target. That is the target. So the target from the MTSF was then broken down per MTF, which was what, about 1 million 100 hectares. 1 million 100 hectares. That was 1 million 100 hectares in the MTSF over 3 years. Then we had to break it down per annum. which then arrived at 370,000 in this particular financial year of 15-16. But then in the middle of this financial year, there was a cut in the budget. So there was no way we are going to go back and review the targets that we had in terms of 2015 and 16. Then we only had a chance to review in 2016 and 17 and also this financial year. That is why you see, even you talk about 16 and 17, annually we have achieved all our targets in terms of land acquisition, although there are some provinces that did not achieve. But annually, cumulatively, we achieved all our targets in 16 and 17. But you'll see that particular detail tomorrow in the performance of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Zulu, for the additions. But based on what you are saying, if there's a additional information on the report for tomorrow, that information was supposed to be also appearing on this, if it's concerning ALHA, so that when we consider this report, to consider it fully, not the other information being in the, you know, in the departmental fourth performance report. I think that must be corrected. When we need information on a specific program, we have to make sure that you give us the information that we want, 100%, not break it down. Honorable members, we have been listening to the presentation. Can we talk to it, interact with it, comment? Honorable Walters, Honorable Fihlane, Honorable Magadla, Honorable Mandela. Honorable Walters?
Chair, first of all, let me just say that I think that this, the report does give us a basis from which to ask questions. I think it's a big improvement to the information that we had in the past. I think it's a very useful addition, and I think it would be good to have this on a continuous basis as well. It refers to beneficiary selection. Chair, where it refers to the process, the categories of people, but what I do miss is a sense of business criteria. After all, if you look at all the problems that are being described in the debt collection, everything that, if you think about it, the state is an investor of taxpayers' money according to a social objective that we all support, and one must make sure that investment is taken up and that it's not the same people benefiting again and again because of poor management or because they're not running the farm or the business properly. So what are the business criteria used in the selection process by the department to in fact invest taxpayers' money into that venture? Also, the beneficiary selection, it refers to categories of people that I don't have a particular problem with, but I think there's some more intrinsic criteria that you need with beneficiaries as well. It's not whether you fit into one of those categories, but also what makes you a good farmer, what's going to make you a success. Is there anything, for example, like psychometric testing, past experience being looked at, but what are the personal criteria beyond what is being mentioned there that's being used? Chair, then the very nature of the field that we're in, and I think we discussed it before in this committee, you have various departments involved. You have various, I can imagine at a local level, there's so many different local government and provincial government components and various departments involved in rural development. What I do miss in this entire, what's been described here, is somebody taking ownership of all the silos, taking ownership of the particular project and making sure that with the right beneficiaries, the right kind of, call it investment approach, making sure that this is taken from inception to fruition, that you can actually let go of a particular project, knowing people are now successful and you can look at using that same resources for more beneficiaries. So I think there seems to be a cycle of money being spent on failures rather than money being spent on successes. Chair, that I think that also relates to me to and I mentioned it earlier in this committee, and I'm just flagging it for consideration. There's various objectives in the land reform space. The 50-50 policy, and when we discussed it, I mentioned this as well. It seems to me, and I'm not saying that it's not compatible, but one must keep it distinct in one's own mind. Is the objective 10-year reform, or is the objective setting up a successful agricultural venture that helps us to transform the ownership patterns in South Africa? And I still think the same comments that I made about beneficiary selection, business criteria, how does it apply there? Because if 10-year reform is the objective, then you know, if you're not clear in your own mind how you accomplish the one, but or let me put it better, if you're not clear in your own mind that you want a successful venture in order to secure 10-year reform, and you look at 10-year reform first and a successful venture second, then there might be a problem. So I think one must keep the objective distinct. I would like to hear how you handle that. And then, Chair, just as a general remark as well, we touched on this in the committee previously as well. It's one thing to look at the government the kind of things that are coming back to us, you know, in terms of what the department is doing in terms of expenditure. I think it relates to, incidentally, under the Ngomyama Trust, the comments that Member Fultani made. How do we know, and what criteria is used by the department on an ongoing basis to measure the business success of each project? In other words, to throw out some examples, profitability ratios, return on investment. There's a couple of things that I think one can use over and above what we are hearing as a committee now to actually have a sense of, on an ongoing basis, how businesses are being successful, farms or land reform projects, whichever way you want to describe it. I'm deliberately using the term business here because that's what I believe is the true objective of empowering people. What measurements are in place for that to measure the success factors within a business? And then I think one can also trace it from inception to success. So I hope I was clear there. If you're not clear, I'm quite happy to engage. But Chair, those are the things that what I'm seeing here to conclude is money being used, and it's nearly as if we are losing sight of a couple of things. And I want to thank the presenter for, I think, there was honesty. It didn't try to sugarcoat some of the problems then. That puts me in a position where I can actually engage. So thanks for that.
Thanks, Chair. For me, first question is, what technical capacity do the selection committees have such that they are actually capable of making the right choices? Now, if you had asked me to do an assessment of why a car is not starting first time, I just do not have the technical capacity to do it. And I could very well point out to all sorts of wrong things and say, no, this car is okay, just because I personally do not have that. The second one, still related, and this has got nothing to do with the sitting CFO. I want to stress that I'm not being personal here. I'm not so sure if this department should be reporting to the CFO. If you look at the objectives and the principles, CFOs, for all I know, are people who are primarily concerned with 1 + 1 = 2. A few of them would have a developmental mind. A few, I would say. I've worked with quite a few in my life. But if you look at the principles, this is not a good product mix. This is to reduce poverty, emerging farmer rekindle, emerging farmers, and you say the highest office within the department to which these people must report is the CFO. One CFO I've ever worked with would only concern themselves with whether the books balance or not. Nothing with a social impact. And I repeat, I'm not being personal with the lady. Yeah, so that is my first question. That is my second question at the department. Is this the right way of allocating functions? If we're looking at the impact you know, that is directed by the, that is driven by the principals. Now, moving from there, I've dealt with the staffing issues. And I would like to know, on what grounds would the minister disapprove? You know, we've been told, and hopefully correctly, that this is the committee that does the selection. The minister basically just endorses, as it were. But I would imagine that these applications go to the minister for him to apply his mind. And I'm asking this because we have come across a couple of cases where we are told by people on the ground that in some cases farms are actually allocated to sitting civil servants. Got a case of a policeman, and not very far from where the minister comes from. And the people are complaining that they do not understand how a policeman who is employed in Alice could have a farm allocated to him a couple of tens of kilometers away from where he is. What consideration does the minister give to cases of that nature? I'm not raising this particular case, I'm just citing it as an example of cases where the committee might not find anything wrong with allocating a farm to a policeman who reports for duty every day, and that does the minister get to be informed about those cases? That's why I was asking about the qualifications of the people who do the assessment. And the next question is, is there a dedicated budget for this or not? And I'm asking this question because you set targets, and on so many occasions you say you have not achieved them. Is it because of budgetary constraints, or is it because people don't qualify? Because obviously when you set a target, you'd be saying, I think there's a reasonable chance of me achieving this target because of ABC. Now, where do you hit the snag? If that is the reasoning process that you follow. And lastly, Chair, we really appreciate the honesty that was displayed by the CFO in this. It does help us. As a committee it does encourage us, let me put it that way, as a committee to look beyond just the written word, you know, when a person presents so honestly, because our job is not as such to destroy what government seeks to do, but rather to check to see if this is the best instrument of achieving what government seeks to do. Lastly, I associate myself with the issue raised by Honorable Walters, and so far as the qualifications of the applicants, I had already scripted it, but he has articulated it so eloquently, I need not try to repeat what he said. I have a serious interest, you know, in that space as well. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of average term of lease, I'm reserving my questions due to pending 2017 audit opinion, as you were saying. What are the challenges or reasons that lead to the debt not being paid by the farmers? How is your policy in terms of recoverability of the debt amount? That is what I want to check. CFO, in terms of land tenure administration, really I'm not clear. Looking at what is happening in the CPAs, and I don't know whether, or I am out of order, I don't know, whether the recap is still in the ALA or in the agriculture. I'm subject to correction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I also wish to welcome the excellent report presented by the CEO, Chair. I am a bit confused, Chair. The criteria and especially the levels, it's very much confusing, Chair. It's indeed a very bureaucratic process, Chair, starting at ground level, which is very good. I'm not quite sure whether it has been, say, up to last year, been implemented like that. But I think I've raised before in meetings that in the area where I am deployed as a parliamentary representative of my constituency, there are a number of people who are extremely angry with the department because they have applied many years ago, and up till now there hasn't been any response to say where are they in the queue. You know, if there's a queue, I'm talking about CFO, the Overberg district. In Exavik, I have at one stage indicated in DGG Southgate, they have undertaken to follow up in relation to the complaints with regard to how the community are treated at your office there, in a particular official's name was cited in DGG Southgate did indicate that he will follow that up, Chair. I must confess, I am not in a position every Monday when I'm in my office, I can't answer questions in relation to this. How, when will there be attention to them or at least feedback? Chair, I think Honorable Magad, Mayor Magad, have raised the issue. The issue of recap, the issue of the strengthening of the relative rights are very, very good policy initiatives. But the impression one gets that it actually came at a time and it literally, to an extent, undermines the ultimate objectives of ALA, the proactive land acquisition strategy, and it is to acquire farms. Because clearly, if one looks at targets not being met, the central question that one has to ask is why are the targets not met? Because one, from a planning perspective, you would actually set a target that is achievable. But when it comes to the execution and implementation and the accounting at the end, the target has not been achieved. So the question is why? Obviously, one could say, and clearly the department have to a large extent admitted to it, when strengthening of relative rights has been conceived, there was no budget for it. So money has to be stolen from somewhere. I'm using this word stolen in a very liberal manner as a good intention. You know, this step, Honorable Nguni, is a good one, you know. It has been stolen. It has been stolen from, it appears, from this, the money that has been set aside for ALA. It's very, very clear. The same applies with RECAP, Chair. Now, one understands very clearly why RECAP has been introduced. Because giving someone a farm, and the farm lays barren because the person does not have the capacity or the resources to make that farm productive, is an intervention through RECAP that is good. But RECAP is now where it's supposed to have been right in the beginning. You know, I fear, Chair, I have indicated at one point, if things continue in the manner that it does now, then very, very soon this department will be stripped of all its functions. You know, RECAP is going back to, or is going to agriculture. Chair, when the commission stands on its own feet, you know, as a chapter 9 kind of institution, as we have spoken about before, it really then, the question, if I was president, I would then ask myself, why do I have this department? Should this department not be integrated into agriculture completely, Chair. But I'm just thinking out loud, Honorable Chop, mustn't worry, I will not be president now or ever. Chair, the other question I want to ask, the report actually gave us an indication to say 144 farms have been acquired since 2009. The question I would wish to ask is, how many of these acquired farms has been allocated to individuals or groups of individuals, Chair? The other question related to that is obviously how many has not been allocated, and what is happening to it at this present moment in time, Chair. I also wish to ask, is there any, I mean, we have now the Office of the Valuer General, Chair. Are there any role that the Valuer General is playing in this particular process, Chair, or whether acquiring the land or whatever, Chair? I'm asking these questions, Chair, because, and I'm very, very happy that the CFO have raised this progressive initiative across our borders by our neighboring government, Zimbabwe, in literally repossessing farms that have been allocated but are not being used in order to reallocate it so that it can be used, Chair. Which is actually a very, very good thing. One ask yourself, has it not happened before? What has been come of those farms who have been allocated and nothing has happened since the farms has been allocated? Chair, that it's just lying barren there, Chair. Chair, the issue of land is a very, very emotive, a very a popular, everyone, we will get very soon a land party that are being launched, Chair. People that will think they could generate votes from such a party, but it's a very emotive thing, Chair. We, this department is expected to deliver, Chair, on that. We need to, as Honorable Walters have said, change the patterns of land ownership, Chair, and this department must actually play a major, major role in doing that, Chair. So hence, more money has to come from somewhere, Chair, so that this process can be accelerated, Chairperson. So one certainly pray, Chair, I don't pray very often, but one pray that the department, when it's shifted, that they don't take money and shift the money also to agriculture, Chairperson. I hope the CFO will pray with me that that would not happen, Chair, but that money rather be used to acquire more and more and more farms, Chairperson. I must just say lastly, one looks at the criteria, it's stipulated, woman, it's stipulated, youth, but I see CFO, people with disabilities are invisible, they are not there, they are not entitled to be considered to become farm owners, despite the fact, Chair, that Department of Agriculture has a specific award that it annually gives to farmers, disabled farmers, and the last one in actually was a woman who won it in KZN, Chair, and for information, she's in actually a blind person who have won that particular award, which clearly illustrates, and I'm saying this, CFO, to indicate to you that that invisibility should not be there. If given a chance and opportunity, people with disabilities will be able to become excellent farmers, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, people who drive cars or who use public transport are potential people with disabilities. So it's for all of us. So when we talk about people with disabilities, we are not talking about people out there. We are talking about us. We have a potential to be disabled today. When we move out of here, we can be involved in an accident. So the question of seriously looking at people with disabilities that they are not locked out, I think we need to take it very seriously. It's about us. It's not about other people. I once read a holy book, and this holy book talks about that if you give somebody who is not stable mentally a sword, and they go out and kill people with that sword, those people are not to blame. The person who is to blame is the one who gave them the sword, knowing fully well that these people are not rational. This person is not rational. So when they kill somebody, you will be the one who is to blame. I'm saying this in line with what the CFO said. Very good presentation indeed. But that you give people money, not knowing that they are going to be able to account for this money. We give them without even, you know, like checking their capacities and all. And when people are failing to repay the money, we say we want to get it from them. Why did you give them that money in the first place without establishing that, will these people have an account? Do they have an account? Do they have the capacity to manage those funds? Do they have capacity, for instance, to report, you know, or even to manage the overall business? So now I think we cannot blame those people. We need to look at who okayed this money to go to those people, fully knowing that they are not going to be able to account for it. On slide 16, there's something that I really do not understand. I haven't gone to school for many years, so this thing, page 16, is it 15? Average terms of lease and average cost of leases. What are these figures? Average term of lease, it says 30 years, and then others, on others it's zero on KwaZulu-Natal. And then there's a figure, and then there are two other zeros and eight and a six under categories. I just want to understand. Are these monies owed by these leases, by these people who are leasing? Or what is this 13, 2, and 0? I don't understand what they mean. And what happens if somebody does owes more than what they can pay in terms of leases? There are people who have been leasing farms for more than 5 years or, and they've always been declaring that they are not making money. What is going to happen to those people? Are you going to take the land from them and give it to those who have skills to account for those? And then what happens to the debt owed? There are instances where I've seen people who have leased farms with houses, and usually the farms will be fenced. But the fences are deteriorating, they're going down. The houses are becoming dilapidated because people are not putting in money to maintain those houses, or even the irrigation systems, because if you are not using an irrigation system, obviously it will go down. There will be grass growing into the pipes that leads to blockage of pipes and all that. So, yeah, I just want to check out what was in your mind, what was in the department's mind, giving people money without ascertaining that they will be able to account for it.
Honourable Walters, Honourable Mngoni, Chair, in fact, a further point that I wanted to raise was touched on by Mchabeleng. The more specifically, has the department looked at something similar to the old agricultural credit boards, where after careful consideration, emerging in the context of those times, emerging farmers or people who wanted to farm were given soft loans but it's similar to a nearly like a venture capital approach, where it starts off with seeding capital, seeing how well the person is performing, and then for giving further loans to expand the business as somebody proves their ability to farm. And I think that minimizes the risk of the department, and I think it also then releases more resources for more people to be to benefit, more land to be acquired. So again, it speaks to what criteria is used, to business criteria and personal criteria are used. Jay, I also think if that particular problem can be solved, if government has the reputation of investing in successful projects and that the projects that they are involved in is successful, that in itself attracts further investment and further money, which again takes more makes more resources of the state available for more people. So I would love to hear what the thoughts are on that. Jay, I'll leave it at that. I do think strategic partners and strategic partner selection. It didn't really come to the fore in this particular presentation, but maybe if you can also explain what are the criteria and the processes for strategic partners to be selected for the projects. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. I may have missed your outline, Chair, as to how the program for the day will go vis-a-vis lunch breaks and something like that. It's 9 minutes to two now. The social needs, that's a better concept, yes, Chair, for the social needs cluster. The maybe at some other levels, Chair, I may then have to get nearer to the insight. I had to politely try and persuade the ITB to get home and to the airport lounge as soon as possible. But this is second floor. When I was ground at G29, there was some catering service, just something, the social needs, so-called. So I'm just saying sometimes it's quite awkward, Chair, just for the systems to adapt. I'm not a good eater, really, but I'm just saying it would be good to have an idea how we working, and perhaps to look if it will give us best productivity to just go right through the day, you know. But my point would have been, Chair, although it defeats my very same concern, because in the time to respond, by the time there's a response, lunch will be closed. I don't know how we'll... would be page 12, page 13. Definitely I'll raise the issue about formats and just leave it at that, but overall. And think that just like in that other land management, that thing managing ESTA, that entity, sometimes the reporting is, because it's unique in its nature, then the reporting, everything that is done in public space can fit into the treasury reporting format. Everything. You cut this into programs, the indicators, the what, and write through the targets, and then the what, and so forth, you know, depending whether it's at the planning stage, like at policy statements, which you call budget statements, and at annual reports. But there can be a format for everything, and there is a format for everything. The narrative is very difficult to really apprehend strategically in terms of the government approach. 12-13, Chair, the Western Cape and page 12, had underperformed by some 7,000 odd, and Mpumalanga province had underperformed by some 14,000 odd, and Eastern Cape had underperformed by some 25,000 odd. I don't know what those units are. The authors know. And they should be stated, by the way, so that we don't look too... Then on page 13, again, Eastern Cape underperforms by over 50%, and Northern Cape overperforms, and Limpopo overperforms. I don't know sometimes if this could be unpacked, because you might think it's good performance only to find that there was something gone wrong there, or the money is simply wired from one province to the other. So, but consistently again on this page, Eastern Cape underperforms glaringly. Now, Chair, I'll be particular about such provinces as Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and KZN. While there's poverty all around, but generally there's universal agreement that they are the worst hit by poverty indices. Yeah. So the underperformance this level in both pages reflected, I would just be seeking some explanations on those. I may miss the responses, Chair, given that we're seemingly driving throughout. So physiological needs and others. Thank you.
Thank you. I've been noting the questions. CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I will answer some of the questions, and some of the questions I'll hand over to the DDG. I think that the first question I will answer Honorable Member Filtani, because it becomes a basis of quite a lot of things. When the PLUS strategy was developed, I think there was no thought through. We developed and we did not, I think there was no thought through that this land will continue to increase, and therefore there needs to be some strategy that needs to be implemented on how do we then bring in efficiency. So the strategy was developed in 2002, implemented, and it has been like that for years. And I don't think we could have preconceived that things would change. These are the challenges that we might encounter. This is where we are taking this whole program to. And I'm saying so because all these challenges is, it comes back to where you see that the CFO heads the entity. And she heads the entity solely because the people that are in the entity are financial management people. There is no operations there. The operations lie within the department in Program 5, being LRD. So LRD would not have managed ALA because they don't have the financial management skills. They have their technical, which is operations. So we had to look at who is best suited to lead the financial specialist. Being finance, then the function was given to myself. Now, when we are currently in a process of repositioning the entity itself, we've hired GTEC to, now they have done the pre-feasibility study, just to find out how best could these things be repositioned and how best can it achieve. Because at the beginning, we had an objective that we wanted to achieve. One of them would have been sustainability. And one of them would have been an efficient system of managing this land that we have. But because we have not followed through after developing the strategy, that portion had failed. So we've hired GTEC, which is an arm of the state, reporting to National Treasury, to come up with a strategy. Can we go full-blown on these things, on the entity? Because you can't just have an entity that has one section being financial management. It's not an entity. It's in effect a subdivision of a finance department, not necessarily an entity. So they are busy with that. I think they are finishing now end of June this week.
they will be giving us the report of the research that they have done for us. Then we will determine how do we go forward. Because currently the biggest challenge is I sit with financial management. He sits with operations. Someone else sits with property management. So you don't have a full cycle of this entity. And that then the responsibility lies everywhere. It becomes a challenge when a responsibility is lying everywhere. So we're working on that. That is the reason why it's reporting to CFO. It's because solely what exists within that entity is financial management only. And most definitely I would appreciate taking it away from my shoulders. We do have a dedicated budget on ALA. It comes specifically appropriated. It's not conditional, but it's specifically appropriated for ALA. That then we indicate that this is for recapitalization, this is for land acquisition, and lately the strengthening of relative rights. The reasons of non-achievement, my DDG touched on them, and they vary depending on the environment. The provinces differ. Like in Gauteng, there is no land. Where there is land, it's too expensive. Equally so in Eastern Cape, Western Cape, it's very expensive to get land here, and it's difficult to get that land. And it differs. Then you look at Limpopo, which is more communal than private. There's more state land. So it differs everywhere, other places. And some of the reasons could be our own non-performance, which we deal with. So the reasons differ. I think he will again touch. I will go back to Honorable Nchabeleng. You ask a very difficult question. Do we give people money without checking their capability to manage the farm? And who approves this money? The approval of the money is through the committees. I had a slide on the committees when I began. But it's very difficult to balance this thing. We must understand that the government has created a beneficiary state. Everybody wants government to give them everything for free. And unless government says, I'm changing that mindset, it becomes very difficult. We run beneficiary grant system. Social development does the same, does the same. Everybody does. We all giving the money. So it's something that has got to be driven from a policy perspective if we want to make our people productive. But certainly CFO cannot come and say, now I stop the grant. We have created that. And when you talk about selection, we always say we want to redress the 1913 and 1936 unjust actions. And most definitely then you are saying, I must go and fund people that do not have money. And if a person does not have money, how do I know he will pay me? Because he has never been able to show himself that he's able to do anything anyway. So it's by chance.
But when talking of recap is a grant.
Yes.
What you are saying is just capacity building must start first. Than before,
yes.
You provide the grant. Not the issue of repayment, because those people don't repay, but it's just a grant. They need to be empowered how to use the money, how to account so that at the end of the day, when you empower them, in other words, you're providing them with skills, you're providing them with infrastructure and everything, just to teach them how to account for the money that has been allocated to them.
Chair, we do that. We give them, these people, a strategic partner. We get counted. All these things are there. And then we've got the project officers from our offices that runs and do those things. But still, we come back to the same. There are those that are successful, but we have the ones that are not successful. I think what I'm driving at is there is a policy issue which should run from the government. From our side, we're doing the repositioning, where we're going to come up with systems that could improve the way we're currently doing business, because currently it's a very difficult environment. There are those that you trust and they're making it, and others that... I think what I'm trying to raise is that we have a beneficiary system that is not working. On the matter of people with disabilities, I think DDG will talk about it. The value of the OVG office, they're quite valuable for us. They have reduced the cost for us to a certain extent. I think when they were here, they indicated that we should not look at them as people who are going to reduce the cost, because then we will be limiting their mandate or misdirecting it. But we have seen that they are helping us quite a lot in terms of valuations, because therefore we're not necessarily paying for the things that the additional value that is not there. We're paying the fair value. I think they can report better on that, or perhaps the DDG can also talk about it. But for me, I've seen quite a good value from their presence. The recap was introduced by the minister, the current minister. And when he introduced it, there was no allocation from National Treasury. Even National Treasury, when we met with them last week, we met with them in DPME and DAF, they concurred to say, yes, we know, we never gave you money. You reduced your allocation, your appropriation to cater for this, because we saw that our farms were lying fallow and DAF was not prioritizing them. Therefore, we took 25% of the allocation. If you look at the MTSF targets, you can rest assured we will not achieve it in terms of the hectares to be acquired. And one of the reasons is we have taken part of the money that was meant for land acquisition to do this part of recapitalization, because we were interested in the of our farms. So, yes, it's moving to DAF. DAF want the function. We're saying, yes, we agree, it's your function. Take it, but the money is the baseline of the department, because there was no money, and Treasury agrees there was no money. Although they want us now to consider the Section 42 of the PFMA and paragraph 33 of the Treasury regulation that requires that when you transfer a function, you transfer it with capacity, you transfer it with funding. So we're still stuck there, and Treasury are saying they might have to use their prerogative on what must happen, because they feel it cannot go without money. But it has moved. We are only, my project registers are only the commitments that we have, that we are trying to make good on them, and the rest is being done by DAF. There's not been a final conclusion on that. On the issue of SRR being a good policy initiative, I agree, and I also agree that it undermines the
objectives of ALA. Because when it was introduced and it was half a billion, I looked around and in the department there was no half a billion anyway. So I had to say, well, let's cut the allocation of land in ALA and allocate that half a billion, because it was a commitment that we have made to the public. Yes, it does undermine our objectives of ALA in terms of the land acquisition, because now what was used to be a billion, now it's half a billion. And rest assured, in terms of the targets, we won't make it on the land acquisition. So I concur. On the question of how many of these farms acquired have been allocated and how many has not been allocated, and what is happening in those farms, I will, when a DDG is answering, I will look at it. I think I have a slide of it that I put somewhere. On what grounds would minister disapprove allocation applications? I don't know. Perhaps DDG knows, but I don't know. We are not allowed to allocate farms to civil servants. Okay. But then I don't know if there's any that has and how they got them. On the qualifications of applications, DDG will talk about it. And the capacity of the technical committee, I'll hand it over to DDG. The average term of lease is 30. I think the issues of CPAs, I would not be able to answer. I think the guys that works with CPA are not here. It's the land tenure section. The challenges that lead to debt not being paid by owners, and what does the policy on debt management say? The policy on debt management, it stems from the Treasury regulations. So we have gone and copied what the Treasury regulations say, and also on the issue of non-recoverable debt or bad debts in terms of the Treasury regulations. Hence, we are able to now introduce the debt collectors and look at the litigations, because that's what the policy requires that we do. In order to prove that indeed this will cause economic hardship on the side of the debtor, or it is just not irrecoverable at all. So the policy is there. But the biggest challenge, and they are different, in terms of the leases, I think that issue of beneficiary also again comes back, because when I introduced the debt collectors, there were people that would call me and tell me, who do you think you are? You are new in the government, you don't know the systems of government, and you don't even know the history why we don't know. So there is that mentality where people just feel that things have got to be for free. So if we can be empowered as officials to do these things, we can do them. But it's not an easy environment to work as an accountant in government. But these things, it's not as if they are not doable. If you go buy a car at McCarthy and you don't pay, they'll come take it. But if I go take a farm today, I'll be the first one on the newspaper tomorrow. And it's a culture that there's nothing. It's a very difficult environment to operate. Controls are there and they are easy to implement, but it's very difficult. If we can just be allowed as administrators to do administration, we can do it.
and if we can be empowered to do that administration. And we they are doable. It's a very difficult environment. And then there are those that came into the system not knowing the business of the day. Those are the ones that you're saying we must empower. Oh, I must shorten. Oh, okay. I'm also hungry.
No lunch, so members were complaining, so try to be short.
Okay. I think the ones that I left, we have not, I have not looked at this old agricultural board system, perhaps because it was perhaps before I was born. I'm the new generation. So I have not looked at this. I think what I trusted in was this thing that we are doing with GTEC, to say they would do studies and recommend what would be the best way of doing this. But I know that this year, Treasury has reduced my budget by 130,000 and gave it to Land Bank to give the soft loans. So we want to test the market and see whether it would yield. I really appreciate, you know, the everybody that has said our presentation could is better. We appreciate it. Give us it encourages us to do even better. So it's much appreciated. And the last ones are these difficult ones of Honorable Waters. I think all of them have nothing to do with the CFO.
The responsible person will respond to that. Mr. Zhu.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You will pardon me with my voice. There's this flu that I have. I think what I'll do, I'll just touch briefly on some of the issues, but now very much, I think the portfolio committee, the honorable members, they are very familiar with me now that I always come with these difficult programs, which have got too many of the challenges, and I think it's a baptism to me because I started in August acting in this portfolio. For Honorable Mnguni, I think the CFO has touched on some of them. I think basically the issue was the issue of the cut on the budget. If you look at even this financial year, our billion rand for acquisition, we had to take 525 million rand for the SRR projects, which then left us with over 400 million rand for your normal acquisition. So obviously that's got a dent, because remember the SRR does not only focus on the acquisition of land only, it also talks to the issues beyond the acquisition of the immovable asset. So we will have to relook at our targets, but we are hopeful that the targets that we've set will be covered. But and then again, on Honorable Mnguni's question, I think we can also provide in writing, Honorable Chair, if you allow us, the reasons, because there are those provinces that seem to be constantly underperforming in these particular areas, your Eastern Cape, your Western Cape, et cetera, so we can provide that written explanation on specifically to those provinces. Then the Honorable Thabi Leng, I think the issue we've noted the issue of allocation of land, and also Honorable Madela on allocation of land to people living with disabilities. I think in our target grouping, in terms of our policy, that is our target group. It's just that we just have to enforce it into our system to make sure that in every year the allocation also reflects allocation of land to people living with disability. I think maybe to touch on what the CFO was saying around the allocation of funds to beneficiaries with these challenges that we have, like the example we have made, I think it's about the system of disbursement of these grants that I think we have already reviewed it, because we have looked at these gaps and these problems, that these challenges that we are encountering in terms of accounting for the money that we have dispersed to them. So we if we are going to continue with the recap and development program, already the system, we have changed the system of disbursement of these funds to try and mitigate that risk that we have identified. But even the commitments now that we are dispersing, we have already changed the system of disbursement of funds. Then Honorable Madela as well, I think the safe always touched on the issues of the recap, etc., and SSR as a strengthening of relative rights, undermining the objectives of PLUS. I think we've spoken to that. Honorable Magadla, I think the issue of the recap, the location of the recap as we speak now, the decision has been taken. It's just that the details, like the CFO was saying, we were busy with those details. Unfortunately, the farmers are the ones who are going to suffer for this gap, this vacuum that has been created. So, but we are trying our best to work together with the colleagues from DAF to undertake this task. The qualifications, Honorable Filtane, on the beneficiary selection and their capacity. When we started the rollout of the district land reform committees, we started last financial year. We rolled them out, we established them. We then established the what we call the district beneficiary selection committees, which is the subcommittee of the district land reform committee. But I think what we have also noticed as a gap is that we must constantly provide training, which we are planning to do so, training to all of them, because the district beneficiary selection committee does the interview, the screening of these beneficiaries. It's a diverse group of stakeholders, which is your commodity organizations, your organized agriculture, and the farmers in that particular area, including the officials from the various departments in that particular district. So they sit in the beneficiary selection committee that does the screening. But we have realized that there is a gap, because in some instances, some of them, even though now we have developed the code of conduct for all of them, but you can see that some of them, even if they do this, there is still some kind of subjectivity in terms of the final allocation of the land to those particular persons. So we have said the District Land Reform Committee, the Beneficiary Selection Committee, cannot be shared by a government official. So it's shared by a commodity organization person, or acknowledge in that particular commodity in that particular district. But we have realized there are some gaps. On the issue of the public servants, if that information can be provided to us, because the police does not allow it, even their spouses, they are not allowed to have to be allocated land through this. Through the land that we acquire through Alha. The Honorable Walters, I think I need to touch on the issue of the grant with the element of soft loans. Currently, we are in discussions with Land Bank. We started with Land Bank. As soon as we finalize our discussions, we'll then present the proposal to our committees for approval, where we are beginning to look at how do we make sure that when we allocate land, also the farmers that we allocate the land under this program, under Alha, they have access to soft loans anytime they want to have. So seemingly, we're agreeing with Land Bank. If the committee, once we have done that, maybe we can also come back here and present what we have agreed with Land Bank in terms of how we're going to support financially through soft loans or revolving credit for all our farmers to not necessarily to rely on the grant from the state or the grant that will be coming from DAF, but also they've got access to credit facility. And again, I think the CFO has touched on the controls that we have put forward in terms of managing the grants that we dispersed to farmers. We contracted accountants, which we have paid. We also have strategic partners, but still you can see that there is a problem in terms of accountability and the management of these particular farms, that there were these assets that we allocate to them. I think the reason being that previously, as the CFO has said, when the program started in 2009, even before 2009, there were a couple of farms that were acquired and transferred to the name of the state under this program, under ALHA. The selection was not very strict. You can see that in some of the farms which were allocated then, you will find that in actual fact, you find farm dwellers and labor tenants, which we have agreed as a department to say all of those farms during this process of assessment of all these blast farms, we are going to then dispose to those particular communities, because it was like one size fits all. It was not about whether you are capable of, as long as you have applied for that particular piece of land or you are on the particular farm, which then created some problems that we have now in terms of the management of those farms. But now we have the PMU that is doing the assessment on all these farms, which will then give us an indication how many of these farms have been neglected, abandoned by the farmers, which are not productive. Then we come up with a strategy in terms of reallocation of those particular assets to persons that will use them profitably and productively. The issue of the categories and target groups, I think they are very well defined in the policy. But in terms of selection, for persons, there is a criteria that we have developed, although there are gaps. But the main thing that the beneficiary selection committee at district level looks at is the skills capability of that particular individual. That is why the CFO is saying the ones that we have allocated in the past 3 years, they are better than the ones that were the farms that were allocated in the previous years since the inception of the proactive land acquisition program. But now we can see the difference in terms of the capacity of those of particular individuals or those farmers who are allocated, because we are becoming more and more stricter in terms of our criteria and allocation. In terms of the minister disapproving the allocation, the minister does not, the MCM, the Ministerial Coordinating Committee, does not approve applications. NLEC approves applications. So if you look at what goes to the MCM, where the minister shares, the minister concurs with the approval from NLEC. If there are issues, the MCM refers back to the approval structure, which is NLEC, not the MCM, to address those issues and bring it back. Almost all the applications that are approved by NLEC, they go through the MCM. Minister does not disapprove, because the committee does that at an NLEC level, which is a structure before, which is, in terms of our policy, only NLEC approves. MCM just concurs with the approval from NLEC. If they've got issues, they will refer it back to NLEC to consider those key issues and then refer it back to MCM for concurrence. Honorable Chair, if I've missed some, then the process of the selection of strategic partners, there are three processes. The first one being that we advertised. When we started the program of recap, we advertised. We then got strategic partners. Then they had to indicate which provinces they want to be strategic partners. The second part is the beneficiaries themselves can directly identify a mentor or a strategic partner. And then that gets approved by the committees. So any strategic partner involved in the process, it gets approved irrespective of which method it was identified, but it gets approved by NLEC for that particular piece of land in terms of the control, so that we understand there is accreditation for each and every strategic partner that gets appointed or identified by either the farmers themselves or through our advert process. Honorable Chair, I think I've covered, not unless I've missed some, but I will answer some of those.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zulu. What you have missed out, I think you'll just provide us with details when you come back, because this will not be the first and the last session. I'm still going to engage the department members. We were saying we don't have lunch. Now we are raising hands. The people were saying something about social and whatever matter that the ones now wants to delay us further. Not going to allow them. Honorable members, before we conclude with this session, let me take this opportunity to thank the department for the presentation, but just to emphasize that to me, this program was initiated to address the skewed land ownership, especially the previously disadvantaged individuals. In most cases, I used to say that I'm still not satisfied with the business plan, although I don't know the format, because some of the people, the previously disadvantaged individuals who want to access those farms, are not learned. So if that business plan is a 10-page, 20 thing you have to explain in English, then at the end of the day, who's going to benefit from this program? Because really, the programs that are intended to transform or to address the injustices of the past must really address those. To me, a one-page or two-page thing will suffice. In Zulu, Siswati, Tsonga, you know, Venda, in all these languages, so that even that household farmer, the backyard farmer, can be able to fill that form in isiZulu or isiSwati for that person to have a piece of land. Another thing is that you can't allocate a person who has not yet farmed a 1 hectare, then you allocate that person 100 hectares. Because something must start somewhere. If a person is a backyard farmer, you can allocate that person 1 hectare. If that person was productive, then the 1 hectare farmer who's productive can be allocated 10 hectares. Meaning that at the end of the day, some of the hectares that we acquire can be subdivided and be allocated to more people rather than giving one person 50 hectares. A person who has not yet farmed, at the end of the day, that farm will not be productive. But nevertheless, I think we have to continue with the engagements on these matters so that really we make sure that this program is really initiated to address or to achieve its intended objectives. Because what we want to see as the committee, we don't want to see the farms being repossessed, but we want to see the farms being productive, to alleviate poverty, unemployment, hunger, and address some of the challenges, inequality, and some of the challenges that you are experiencing here in this country. People need to be assisted. People need to be supported for them to be productive. I've realized in the report that you need to do more on the issue of the farm dwellers. You understand, you know, Mr. Zulu, the frustrations of the farm dwellers. We've cited some in our reports. We need to, I think we have also been taken to court on this matter of the labor tenants. You need to do something on this matter. I'll also request that you provide us with a revised policy. If the ones that we have has been revised, if that policy that has been revised has been adopted, can it be circulated to the members of the committee? The other thing is that we need to learn that empowerment must be a priority. Empowerment of beneficiaries must be a priority, and money must follow last, not manifest empowerment last after the damage has been made, but we have to empower people and make sure that when we provide them with resources, they will be able to use those resources effectively. You promised that you'll provide details on the underperforming provinces and also the progress report on the issuing of the soft, the engagements that the department is having with the land bank. Honorable members, I think this will conclude our discussion on this matter. We're still going to have other discussions on this program to discuss it intensively, so that at the end of the day we make sure that the money that we allocate to the department is being used effectively, efficiently, and for the benefit of the South African citizens. Honorable members, we've got only the next item, any other business. We don't have that item, but it's just an invite from the Office of the Deputy Minister Mashego with regards to the launch of the One Household, One Hectare in Plattenberg Bay on the 29th at 10 o'clock. Members will be available. They can attend that launch. Honorable Walters?
Yeah, that's my question. Is it 29th of July or 29th of June? There's a big, big difference.
Okay. 29th June. Is it tomorrow? Thursday? Thursday. Honorable Filter?
Thank you, sir. Are we being provided with transport to get there, or what? What's the situation, logistics?
There are no details on the invite. You'll check with Pumla whether there any accommodation on that. If not, we'll discuss this matter outside this meeting, but the invite has been sent to me irrespective of whether the secretary has it. I have to announce it to the members, because we always indicate to the department that they invite us a day or 40 hours before the event. I think the secretary will get the invite, but that was the announcement that I was making for members to be ready. If they are available, they have to attend. I think Bembe will just consider that if the secretary has not received it, you'll just correct that, because it must start to the secretary and be circulated to members accordingly. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned till tomorrow at 10. I think it's the same venue.